got my dice and I got my friends. We're going on a quiz that never ends. You know when there is trouble abound, me and my crew will always be around. Ladies and gentlemen, I am the Lone Gunman, and it's time for the Gamers Haven Podcast with your hosts, Ethan, Jeremy, and Nathan.
Welcome back to the Gamers Haven Podcast, and you might notice we're in three digits now.
Boss!
Boss!
What?
We got intruders.
Yeah, I know, we invited them.
But,
or something.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Get sure. Back in the closet.
There's this thing called Face Page.
Closet.
Or Face Space.
But,
closet.
Yeah, something like that.
My book.
But it's the 100th episode. Yeah. Come on.
No.
Guys, please.
No. We have
you closet. Can come out for
Fine.
This episode.
Yes.
Only this episode.
Only this episode.
After this, back in the closet.
Fine.
Don't worry, I'll dig you out next week.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is our big, snazzy 100th episode sort of send out. Not send off, because we're going to do another.
Yeah, we're never going to stop.
We're never
going to
stop.
We're dead.
You know, unless we receive death threats.
Even no.
If we receive
actually,
death threats,
no,
that
death
just
threats,
makes us
do more.
Makes
do more.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just looking back on our memories of the Gamers Haven, you know, there's that whole... Got we pissed off a sponsor once.
We did.
That was fun.
I helped.
You did.
Actually, I would think I was 95% of that.
You.
The best part of that was I won that book at my first CanCon.
You did, and it was terrible.
It was terrible.
It was a terrible
it was bad book. It was very bad.
I didn't do it on purpose.
Yes, but we've done.
Well, it doesn't matter. The fact that he was a sponsor was completely separate from the fact that you were reviewing his
true.
Product.
Yep. Well, not only all this, but we are also. This is our first episode under our new Nerdvana Network banner.
You have reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
Exactly. We have reached a higher level of Nerdvana, which is a collection of various websites and podcasts, blogs, merchant sites, and whatnot that are all part of being Nerdvana and sort of being what it is to be a nerd, be a geek, be a dork, that sort of thing.
And be proud of it.
And be proud of it, yes. We got actually new podcasts that are going to be showing up on there within the next several months, we hope.
Mm-hmm.
A couple blogs on there, including Project Uncool from Uncool Aaron, who is actually editing our podcast now, so he's all cool that way.
Very cool.
He loves editing.
But he's not cool at all.
No, he's uncool. He's an uncool guy.
Right.
And his blog is about basically him bettering himself and basically trying to not
become
be uncool.
Cool.
To
and,
become cool.
And you've got a new project you're working on.
Yeah, I'm doing a blog called Why Not Write, which is sort of me flexing my writing muscle after I let it atrophy for about 8 years while I was in school.
Because,
mm-hmm. You know, being in school...
Because schools don't.
Well, yeah. It kind of, that whole being forced to write papers kind of kills your love of writing, and so...
Well, that's mm-hmm. true.
I'm trying to actually write other things and get back into it. So I used to be really deep into writing back in high
yeah.
school and then junior high
and
stuff like
that.
And
then school destroys it.
Yeah,
it
just, you know...
The whole society
thing, so.
And school and all that kind of destroys it.
Nice. So whynotwrite.com is where you can find that. Project Uncool is, of course, at projectuncool.com. There's obviously one of the other podcasts that I'm a host on, Confessions of a Movie Snob at confessionsofamoviesnob.com. You can find us there where we talk about movies and being snobs about them.
It's actually a very good podcast. I listen to it.
Yes, Noah has been on it twice, I believe.
So. Were you snobby?
Three times, actually.
We'll get you on again.
Were you snobby on it?
I was not. I tried to be humble.
You know, have I told you the story of why I'm a movie snob?
No.
It's because... I didn't like Resident Evil 3.
I was
labeled a movie snob because I didn't like Resident Evil 3. And I said, well, if not liking a piece of crap like that makes me a movie snob, then gleefully I will call myself that.
I've got my project I will be starting up in July once everything settles down. Well, once everything settles down and once I'm freed from...
your time constraints of
no, it's not just the time constraints. It's the
crime
fighting.
Sweet. Crime fighting.
Legal documents.
Legal
I can't talk about
NDAs.
It. Yes. Non-disclosure agreement.
Free of your NDAs.
Yes. Which no, I can say what it's. I can say what it's about. I'm
gonna, around you.
Well, I can tell everybody what it's about. I just can't do it yet because they won't let me describe
you
the program.
Have too many like dingly things on your crime fighting.
Will people show up at our door and shoot you? Or?
Hopefully, I hope.
I mean, they
not.
Shoot you.
I hire them to do that.
Oh, really? It's the same guys who went around and made people change from 3rd edition to 4th edition?
Yes.
Okay, cool. They did work.
But I'm going to be taking the massive, massive campaign setting of Tallis, and I'm going to be describing how I, or step-by-step, what I'm going to be doing as I put it into the lovely, lovely upcoming program from Lone Wolf Development, Realmworks. So I'm going to be doing a blog. I'm going to be
blogging
about that.
Quite the undertaking for anyone who's seen Tallis.
800-page campaign setting book.
Oh, yeah.
It's big.
It's an awesome setting.
You turned me on to it, and it's probably
with sewers? Or you
no, I'm going to start with chapter one. What I'm going to do is I'm going to start with chapter one. And I'm just going to work my way through. I'm going to be putting it in as it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take it as it's presented. I'm going to. So it starts with like a history section. I'm going to start putting in the history into the timeline that's available. And you guys will see more come July once I actually have the full program and talk about it a lot more.
Excellent, excellent. My wife and I are going to be doing a podcast coming up soon called Just Be. Don't have a lot of information on that one right now. Also going to be doing a resurrection of a show we used to do that my buddy Aaron and I used to do called Red Phone Zone Fan Service, where really the best sort of thing I can say about it is it's inside the actor's studio but with fans. So it's if you're a fan of something, I'm going to try to get you on the show and basically like ask you a bunch of questions.
Hopefully not as boring.
Hopefully not as boring. I'll try to liven it up, you know.
Yeah.
Flex those interviews.
Maybe hit him with a chair.
Was Red Phone Zone boring?
No.
Red Phone Zone had Shay.
It's not
on
the
it.
Red Phone Zone that I'm saying is boring.
Oh.
Never mind.
Red Phone Zone is what became Confessions of a Movie Snob.
And they're just repurposing.
Now I'm repurposing Red Phone Zone without the whole Shay element.
He connected it to another show.
Yes.
That I consider very boring.
Yes.
So
there you go.
To talk about news that's current right now.
Their current news? What?
Yeah, current as of the time that we're recording this. So yesterday,
which we are recording on April 5th.
Yeah. Yesterday, April 4th, it was pronounced all over the web, all over the interwebs in the news that Mr. Roger Ebert.
Yep, Roger Ebert passed away.
Roger Ebert passed away.
Thumbs up to him, I suppose.
Yes. So I posted this really.
I'm not a big fan of movie reviewers, so.
Yeah. He actually had some. If you ever get a chance to watch the TED Talk that he did after he lost his jaw and had other people read for him, it's actually very good. Speaking of deaths of things in the gaming community, the LucasArts studio has been shut down by Disney.
Arts, yeah. I thought you were going to go into, you know, the creator of zombies, but
well, there's that too, guy. and the unfortunately within the last month since we last recorded, we lost the creator of the wonderful, wonderful board game, one of my favorite board games, Zombies.
What happened?
So you put me on the spot here, and now I have to go look it up again. I honestly can't remember. I think he was either sick for a while or, help me out here, Ethan.
We're not news reporter.
No, we're not.
We're really
horrible. We're terrible.
Well, in the meantime, while Ethan looks that up, some fun gaming news. If you were ever an NES gamer, like a lot of us were, they are remaking the original DuckTales game for NES in HD, which is going to be a lot of fun. Let's see. What else have we been up to gaming-wise? Todd Breitenstein.
Yes, he passed away. The creator of the Zombies game from Twilight Creations.
How he died? Or?
No.
Okay. But yes, Todd Brighton, great guy, great.
We don't care how he died; we cared how he lived.
Yes, we did. He put out a lot of really, really great, great games. The new Sentinels. What we've been doing in gaming before we get into what we're really doing this episode, the new Sentinels, the Multiverse expansion has arrived to those who pre-ordered it, and it is.
Who did we get destroyed by? How old is she?
The dreamer with six hit points kicked the crap out of us.
Well, okay, but here to be fair, as opposed to fighting her for her hit points like you do with every other boss, you actually have to protect
there
her.
There was no fair. There was just death.
Let's see. What else do we have?
We can beat the crap out of La Capitan, though.
Oh, yeah. You and I just
toasted
her.
And what's going on tomorrow and the next day?
Yes. Well, on April 6th and 7th, it's Planet Comic-Con here in Kansas City, and you know we get to meet great folks like George Takei and Will Wheaton and others.
Peter Mayhew's going to be there.
Plus numerous comic artists
and web comic artists and authors.
One of which is actually sitting in here with us right now. Two of which
are sitting in here.
Thank you.
Yes. It's been a long day.
It has been a long day.
I destroy your floors once, and then you never acknowledge me again.
Nope.
You know how long it took me to repair those?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I told you to tunnel through the closet to get me out.
I'm sorry. Sometimes
she miscalculated. There was the whole converting from metric to imperial, and that screws everybody up.
I got some awesome granite tunneling jeans out of them, though. Thanks a lot.
That's true.
And then we also have
your...
So we have my lovely girlfriend Sarah's, the webcomic she does the coloring for, which is
Zero's Heroes.
And we have Aaron sitting here. Say hi, Aaron.
Hello.
Who is the writer on Zero's Heroes, and you can check them out at newhavencomics.com.
Mm-hmm.
And along with us, we have a large portion of our Gamers Haven actual play crew.
Gamers Haven regulars.
Irregulars. They're the irregulars.
Yes. We're the regulars. Okay. So we're regular, they're irregular. Whoa.
And what does that say about us?
That says a lot. We need more fiber, apparently.
They make yogurt for that. So.
They do. Jamie Lee Curtis talks about it all the time. Man.
So what are we going to talk about first?
Well, this is our 100th episode, sort of in conjunction with that, you know,
stories, after comics.
We started this show back in November. On November, we released our first episode on November 26th, 2006, so like right around Thanksgiving.
Jeez, we do not put out shows very quick, do we?
No, we don't. But actually, we do. What happened is we do a lot of special episodes and interviews, and then we got jumped into doing actual play, which we started releasing actual play recordings on April 21st, 2008. I spent some time getting some stats and some interesting stuff here, but like of our regular episodes, of like episode 1 to 99, we've done 143 hours, 38 minutes, and 30 seconds, which is almost 6 full days of podcasting. Our special episodes, which are, you know, anything from just, you know, episodes that we didn't actually put into the numbering scheme to, you know...
Like the interview series that you did with a bunch of industry guys?
Well, the interviews are something separate. Special episodes are just, you know, where we did some sort of a special, like our Any Awards specials and things like that. We did 29 hours, 54 minutes, and 53 seconds, roughly, of that. There are over
people still listen.
Yeah, and there are over 10 hours of interviews on the podcast now, of interview episodes. And you remember, you know, the snippet review episodes, those little bits? We've done over 6 hours of those.
Oh, that's nice.
Wow. Yeah, yes.
But obviously, the big majority of the 90 gigabytes of data that's on the site, posted on the site right now, is the actual play, which after we had to do a little bit of estimation and whatnot and sort of figuring in Andre's huge amount of stuff that he's posted.
Thank you, Andre.
What we have, if you sat down and listened to all of our actual play, it would take you approximately 72 days, that's full 24-hour days, 4 hours, 50 minutes, and 11 seconds to listen to it all.
That's... And the crazy part is, if you consider it,
mm-hmm.
we actually have listeners who have like
we actually have people that have probably listened to all of that.
So shout outs to our regular listeners, Mo, Tracy, mm-hmm. Sanjian, of course.
Yes, yes. I'm sure he's in his Temple of Doom right now, listening to probably
taking another heart,
out of his
I know he's getting his.
But he's in Canada, so there's only 3 people in Canada.
Right.
He's pulling a heart out of a moose.
Yes.
Poor moose.
He's getting his rituals ready because he will be back at CantCon again this year.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. And
two people are leaving Canada. That's 2/3 of their population are coming
only temporary.
To CantCon.
It's only temporary.
2/3
I understand
of their population
that.
Are coming to CantCon.
It's still only temporary.
Well, I think that's huge. 2/3 of the population of the Great Red Menace to the North are coming to CantCon.
The Great Red Menace. Huh.
And but we also
really?
I mean,
yeah.
let's face it, we've got listeners all the way out in Sweden. We've got listeners in South Africa.
I had one in New Zealand.
We have one in New Zealand.
Yep, we do.
Hello to the Is he the ninth pagan now, or is he still the eighth pagan?
I don't know. Tenth pagan?
Tenth pagan?
Sixth pagan? I don't know if the numbers go down or up.
As he absorbs them?
I don't know.
Yeah.
He has to email
I think if
again.
He reaches one, the first pagan, he reaches critical mass or something. I don't know.
Okay. But
it's very strange.
But hello to all of our listeners.
Germany, Austria.
This is so random.
But it's fantastic. It's really fantastic.
Japan, we do have someone listen to us in Japan. Nobody listens to us in China because, you know, it's China.
The one person who listened in New Jersey left.
We came here. We absorbed the person in New Jersey.
Woohoo!
He joined us like
it's all. Hey, by the way, it's all official now. He stalked
us enough that he has now joined the show. If you really like the show enough, if you just hang out outside.
Stand outside, scratching the door.
Yes.
They will put out food.
Yeah,
in a bowl.
He started feeding us. We were like, dude, if you're going to feed us, you can just be on the show.
And remember, it started with bread.
It did. It started with bread.
It started with a care package of bread and frogs with chef hats.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, I got to point this out because it's horrifying. Clip art critters. Okay, I don't mind clip art critters. This is free Jesus.
No,
I'm just going to say that again. Clip art critters, you can get Jesus.
It's nice to know that.
Yeah.
You were talking about one of our longtime listeners.
I hope he's not a minion.
What, Tracy?
No, Jesus.
Okay, good to know. Tracy, Rolling Twenties. We've talked about him a bit. Is now a game designer. Does did One Shot and School Days.
School Days.
Mm-hmm. Great guy. He has.
Are you going to offend the system he really loves?
No.
You need to do that in every episode.
Oh, the fate system? Yeah. You mean the horrible, horrible fate system that just, you know, shouldn't be played by anyone who wants to realize?
Right. I know I'm going to have to stay locked in the closet for another...
Don't make me get the hose.
It's really not that bad now that it's been updated from Spirit of the Century.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, no. Gives the players too much control. I forgot.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Ruling with an iron fist, etc., you know.
Is that why we still haven't gotten it? It's only been like a week and a half in like 2 years worth of Mutant Masterminds games.
I think you passed the 2 week mark.
I've never used the face system, so I don't know.
You've had two whole days off in that game.
Well, my character's had a little bit more.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. But.
So.
Anyway, Tracy couldn't actually record anything, but he did want to send us some thoughts for the 100th episode. He said, in late 2008, I wasn't doing much gaming. I had been spending my time listening to the Penny Arcade Wizards of the Coast 4E sessions, and when they were done, I wanted more. I did some searching, and I came across the Gamer's Haven. I started listening to the actual play sessions, and I have to say, they changed my life. Listening to games like Wizards College and Deadlands Reloaded helped to expand my horizons of what was possible in role-playing. In fact, Deadlands was my first exposure to any game other than D&D. In 2010, CantCon became a public convention. It is there that the Gamer's Haven really became a haven for me. I didn't just meet a group of wonderful, passionate people. I met a group of new friends. Since then, a part of me has remained in Kansas City. I will never be able to thank Ethan, Nathan, and Jeremy enough. If not for the Gamer's Haven, I would not be a gamer nor the person that I am today. Congratulations on your 100th episode.
Thanks, Tracy.
Thank you, Tracy. We miss you. We're looking forward to seeing you at CantCon.
Always.
But, you know, I think I need to institute a whole no-fate policy at the con, just... for the general
principle of it, but nobody's run fate in a single session.
True.
Now,
they're afraid I'm going to stop by the booth and go, what are you doing?
Here's a question.
Here, have a feng shui book.
Here's a question. You're only allowed to outlaw one system, fate or rifts.
Ooh. I got to go with rift.
Or fatal.
Or fatal,
No. That doesn't exist.
It's published.
That doesn't exist.
I read it.
I don't care.
Yeah.
That's the only book.
I'm going to go back to the Critters Free Jesus. Happy.
That's more intriguing, yes. But today on the episode, we're actually going to be sharing some gamer stories from pretty much everyone that we could get on the show to talk about.
And we're going to have a couple extras at the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
We're just going to tack them on at the end.
They'll be interspersed here and there. But we're going to have some listeners who've sent in some audio. I know our brother's going to be sent in a few things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to just basically share some of our favorite gaming stories, because really part of the what got us to do this show was these experiences and these conversations we'd have at the gaming table, where we just have a great time. And
I think the story's really come to why we love games and what, what brings us to
here. Exactly. It's sort of why we've done 100 episodes, why we've done, you know, days upon days upon days of audio recordings. So,
and we're going to probably do a little bit of an interview as a side thing for Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah. Definitely have some Comic-Con.
Do we want to do that first or middle? How do we want to do that?
We'll figure that out.
We'll figure it out.
At any rate.
At any rate, we'll be back right after this.
This is Neil Adams, and you've reached the higher level of Nerdvana.
Hello, Gamers Haven, and happy 100th episode. This is Eric Parker, Ethan's older, smarter, better-looking brother, and I am here to record three or four gaming stories for you for the 100th episode, so I hope you guys enjoy them. The first story I want to tell you about is about a mage that I played when I was in college. His name was Horus, and he was a necromancer, though not terribly evil. Sadly, he didn't get to command armies of undead. But you need to know a little bit about the campaign first. Mainly, you need to know about my DM. Now, my DM was a great guy, but he was kind of stingy with money and sometimes with magic items as well. And so we'd been playing for a while, and I had finally come into this magic item that was really, really cool. It was a robe of many stars. And this was a big deal because it was kind of this item that was blessed, kind of this blessed item that essentially was from my goddess, and it was very cool. Well, I got attacked by something, and I forget what that is, but somebody played what's called a whimsy card. And whimsy cards are little cards that let players affect things, affect parts of the game. And so I had failed my save. And somebody played a whimsy card and said, okay, well, one of the stars on the robe will sacrifice itself so that he can make a new save. And Chris, my GM, took that and ran with it. And I made another save and failed and made another save and failed and burned through all 5 or 7 stars on the robe. Before the robe itself offered, up as a free save, and I burned that too. In fact, that whole evening I didn't roll higher than about a 7 on a d20, which in second edition D&D is not so good. Well, to top it all off, at the end of the fight, we did finally win the fight, though there was a purple worm involved, that was actually summoned by, one of my party members. That was exciting. Well, we did win that fight. At the end of the fight, we got a deck of many things. And so all of my fellow party members are going through the deck of many, and they're like, okay, I'm going to draw 3 cards. I'm going to draw, you know, 3 cards. How many cards? 3 cards. Okay. So I go through it, and I, you know, never having actually played where I got a deck of many things and not really remembering what the deck of many things was about, I said, well, I'll just draw 1 card. And I get extraplanar enmity. So all of a sudden, right then and there, this crazy ice demon decided that he hated Horus's guts and wanted to, you know, eat him or, you know, dance around in his skin or something. And that was sort of the perfect topper for this whole evening. So starting with me losing this really neat, really powerful magic item, I can't roll higher than a 7, and then ending with this extraplanar entity who is really pissed off at me. Though it did work out all right, because that extraplanar entity drove at least another semester's worth of the campaign. But yeah, after that, Horus just never had really good luck with magic items.
The Gamers Haven Podcast presents Mutants and Masterminds 3rd Edition, Justice City United. Featuring the Gamers Haven regulars Eric, Jeremy, Robin, and Tracy. GM'd by Ethan. In a world of superpowered intrigue, can 4 heroes trust one another while trying to make a difference? An alien threat, a complacent government, and a sinister villain are only some of the obstacles these 4 need to overcome in order to be some of the world's greatest heroes. Will they be legends, or will they be forgotten? Only time can tell. Justice City United.
Hello,
Gamers Haven Podcast. This is Mo from sunny California. Calling just to share my moment of gaming, or at least my favorite one. And that would be in a 4th edition campaign with one of my coworkers and one of my now best mates, Julian. Now, we were playing with a bunch of other folks, and they're fantastic. They really were. It was one of the best experiences I've had ever with 4th Ed, and I really wish I could go back to it, but people move, we live and grow. It's okay. It happens. But, so we're all a bunch of level 2 or 3 PCs. We're getting bullied around by the city guard until we're sent on a mission to by our handler to check out a warehouse. Now, my character is Suk Lu Wei Yuan, a disgruntled older warlord who drinks a lot. And Julian is a gnome named Demi who is an illusionist who basically is just trying to get money to pay for school. My guy is a merc for hire, kill anyone for about 5 gold. So you can see the dichotomy here. So my guy, along with some other people in the group, specifically Luther von Rommel, Desert Fox, the angry warrior. That was weird. So we're sent to this warehouse, and we... Me and Luther, we immediately realize it's a trap. It's a trap. It has to be a trap. And we get there, and the door is wide open. Trap, 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 trap. And the GM is just going, you guys are overthinking this. And Demi's going, you guys are overthinking this. What's going on? And then me and Luther are like, no. No doors left open for a reason. Especially to a warehouse. So we go next door. And we try and ask whose it is. And we get an angry dragonborn in our face and just says, piss off! And we're like, alright. Whatever, we're not going to fight him. We don't have business with him right now. Right now. Me and Luther make a note. We're coming back. We're vengeful types like that. So, we go to the next warehouse to try and figure out whose it is. And this little gnome answers. And Luther starts getting a little lip from him, going like, I don't have time for this. And he just, he's a big human. He's dumped his status into strength. Dumb as a rock, if I remember correctly. Wise as a oak, if that means anything to you. Picks up the gnome. Carries him over. Makes all of his rolls, too. He is holding this gnome against his will. My character doesn't have the alignment to stop him. The priest looks away and just says, I don't even want to know what you guys are doing. And Demi just says, is this really necessary? And we both answer, yes. God, it is, because that's trapped. So what Luther does is he tries to get who owns the warehouse out of the gnome. The gnome is not complying. The gnome's just like, give me now, put me down, I'm a gnome, what's going on, I'm a gnome, you know, gnome stuff. So Luther chucks him into the room. I mean, chucks him. I think he rolled a 20 to chuck this gnome about 20 feet into the warehouse. And he hits once, the GM rolls, and I think he bounces because he just threw him that far, that hard. And when he lands on the second square, he triggers a pitfall trap. The gnome drops about 15 feet down, gets critted by the fall damage, and dies. Now, this sounds pretty awesome and pretty terrible, but we didn't know he died. Our character didn't. All of our character here was a bounce, a hit, a fall, and a... We assume he's dead. So at this point, I'm weapons drawn, everyone else is weapons drawn, the guys come out of the shadows, and we fight them. And it's not an especially notable fight, you know, dailies are popped, dudes are stabbed, I heal guys by shouting at them and calling them wussies and telling them to stop bleeding on my floor. So, I end up knocking one guy into the pit, and he doesn't die from the fall, but he's down there with the carcass of the gnome. And then we knock another guy down, and we try and force them to surrender. The guy I knocked down surrenders. He puts down the sword. I intimidate him. He lays down face in the dirt, in the mud, actually, with this dead gnome next to him. So he's pretty gosh darn intimidated. The other guy kills the guy laying on the floor for treason. And at this point, I'm pretty pissed. And I want to get down there and stab him. But it's a 15-foot drop. Luther does too, but it's a 15-foot drop. It could kill us at this point because we're bloodied and bruised. Julian... says, I want to incapacitate him. And the GM says, you mean like kill him? He's like, no. Incapacitate. Very clearly. GM says, okay. And he uses illusion magic. I think he called it the flying monkeys. So he rolls, and it's a crit. The GM rules that it's a crit, but he didn't intend it to make it a crit. So he rolls his extra damage. And the GM is like, you would have killed him outright. So I'm ruling you do kill him. And me and everyone else at the table are ecstatic at this. Like, oh my god, how did Debbie kill this guy with an illusion magic that is based on the Wizard of Oz flying monkeys? You know, the monkeys just fly around and get distracted and disoriented and hit yourself or something, right? Because it's not actual monkeys. But this was a sorcerer type. So the GM ruled that the guy tried to fight the monkeys, but they weren't there, and he started kind of going insane because the magic was that convincing that there were now monkeys surrounding him in this 15-foot deep pit full of dead bodies and blood and viscera. So he puts his hands to his head and blows his own head off. And Demi is horrified because she didn't mean to do that. Julian's laughing his ass off that his character somehow accidentally killed someone when he actually, for the first time in a long time, didn't intend to kill anyone. Me and Luther are whooping and howling, and we're just like, oh, this is the best. And I decide then and there that my character now fears and respects this tiny gnome illusionist because she has the power to make people's heads explode, theoretically, on a whim. Now, I wrote this character being very low magic, being very much a military kind of type, very much a brawns and brains, but not magic. So I didn't write him with a lot of understanding of magic. Magic is a thing to him. It happens. Magicians can do it, but he can solve the problem, essentially, of magicians and wizards by stabbing them. So why know anything else? It seems like a pretty straightforward solution. So he's looking at Demi now as this kind of this uber mage, and this fear of respect comes in. So every now and then, in the party, when we get a lot of gold, or when we'd come at a crossroads of what we want to do, my character would instinctively go to Demi as the second most powerful character in the group, next to himself, because he is Suk Lu Wei Wong. He has survived many campaigns. And kind of see if Demi is on his side. Because once he has Demi on his side, he felt like, or at least I felt like, I was basically writing him as this, they could take the rest of the party. Yeah, they probably could. I mean, he's the healer after all, so everyone is getting bloodied up, no one's getting back up. And Demi can make people's heads explode. Pretty simple solution, right? So we go through the rest of the campaign with my guy basically calling Demi his gnome. That's my gnome. You do not F with my gnome. You F with my gnome, you get dropped. Hard. And Demi at the same time would be like, I'll look after drunk, dumb Suk Lu. And I was, it was great. I loved it. I loved that moment. I loved that campaign. Don Perseus, if you're listening, or Precious, I can't remember. If you're listening, I miss you, buddy. I hope you're doing great. You're a great GM. Julian, if you're listening to this, we need to play a game again. Because, my God, that was fantastic. Thank you, Gamers Haven, for letting me use your airtime to get that off my chest. And keep gaming, guys. I love it. And happy 100th episode, guys. Keep doing it. You're doing a great job, really. Alright, see you at another CatCon? Some point, maybe? Yeah, let's do that.
Hey, this is Walter Jones, and you reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
So, when I was 19, one of my friends was going to Texas A&M, which used to have like 3 or 4 gaming conventions a year, and I showed up, and he said, hey, we had some game masters drop out, would you run games for me? So I said, sure. 28 hours straight of dungeon mastering games, and I was just tired. And by the time I got the last one, I basically walked in, and I was like, what's this game supposed to be? I'm your sit-in. They're like, well, we're told it's a high-level, you know, second edition game. We can bring our own characters. And, great, I'm going to try to kill all of you. That sound good? That sounds good. And I just started pulling out, like, first edition monsters and all, like the Gem Bar, which is a dragon magazine, basically a gem golem that you reduce to 0 hit points. You roll shatter. If it doesn't shatter, it regenerates its hit points. Just horrible, monstrous things. And one of the players had, his character was a paladin from a homebrew campaign, but like he was lawful good, but his group was against Kinder. and believed in genociding them? Never figure that one out. Meanwhile, some guy shows up and he... Oh, one second. Are you waiting for me?
20 hours.
Randy's going to catch up real fast because we are at Planet Comic Con.
And basically, I walk in like, what's going on? What's this game about? And they're like, oh, we're all 20th level characters. We can bring our characters. So what's that? That sounds good. I agree. So it's like, great, you're 20th level character, you brought your own, I'm going to kill you all. One guy made a character there. He's like, look, can I just make whatever? Like, yeah. He's like, can I make a Kender? Yeah, sure, make a Kender. Well, another guy comes in, he brought his homebrew character, a paladin of a lawful good religion that was genociding Kender on their whole, like, completely I'm like, I don't understand how that works, but okay. I'm going to kill you all anyway. I don't care. So, one of the tests in the game was a test of wisdom where, you know, it's a law. I stole this from a friend of mine. He did this all the time. It's his favorite evil D&D trick. Long, featureless corridor. Metal. At the very end is a crystal rose that has magic qualities. And there's a plaque that says, the wisest gets the prize. Literally an hour and a half before game, 4 hour game was spent trying to get the stupid trinket that meant nothing. And finally, the Kender, losing all interest, like, oh, let's give up, this is stupid. Suddenly he appears on the far side of the maze because he was the wisest. I wish the paladin looks at me and he's like, I'm like, your god docks wisdom from you. Game goes on, and it's like I'm throwing every awful first edition nightmare monster I can at them, and they're just. They finally get to the big villain, which is basically a first edition witch up to second edition. And so they jump to combat, and like, oh, I curse at the witch. She looks at you. Power word kill. I have always believed in critical fumbles. If you roll one, it's botch a saving throw, paladin drops dead. Two more party members drop dead the same way. It was basically left to, of all things, the bard and the Kender to save the day, and they did. Because the Kender got hold of a wand of wonder, and wand of wondered the cliff under the witch, and it turned to pudding, and she died that way, hurling down into a canyon. So they got hold of this island, which had a wish, and they're kind of gathering bodies up, and the Kender's depressed. He's like, I'm really sad for the paladin. He didn't get to know what happiness was. I wish he was alive, and he knew true Kender joy.
So he turned into a Kender?
Yeah. Basically, this player looked at me and like, give me your homebrew character sheet. He's like, I've been playing this character for 8 years. Give me the character sheet. He hands it over. I'm like, you're a first-level Kender thief with the mentality of your old character. Ripped it, and I burnt his character sheet in front of him. Thought he was going to stop hysterically, and he looks at this guy and he's like, look, I'm in character. I can't help if I broke your heart. And the Kender player, after saying that, shot soft-shoed out of the room, going, da-da-da-da-da-da, and I've never seen that guy again. That is my favorite convention gaming story.
And just a few years after the Marotak invasion, L.A. was destroyed, turned to rubble. However, like an angel, the city rose once more, becoming the City of Angels. The streets had become packed with gang war and supervillain-on-supervillain violence following the murder of the previous superhero group, the Rebels. Will the new kids on the block, the Guardian Angels, be able to reclaim the streets, or will they die trying? Mutants and Masterminds. City of Angels.
My name is Aaron Walter. I am the writer of a webcomic named Zero's Heroes.
Because we hadn't put any real estate taxes, we've never had to do that before.
All right, go for it. Okay. I wasn't really expecting to be sharing a lot of gaming stories tonight, so this was kind of spontaneous. It was ironic, though, that I ended up here because the webcomic that I do, Zero's Heroes, actually started out as a game that I used to run with a group of friends. So a lot of the characters originated as playable characters that my friends had all created for the game, and then when I started developing it into an actual comic story, we had to filter a lot of a lot of the character aspects into a more story environment instead of a gaming environment, because writing for a game is different than writing for a story to be read.
Yeah.
We had you guys are just sharing sharing entertaining stories. My favorite thing about gaming, and I haven't done a lot of it recently just because of my time is monopolized in different ways now than it used to be, and as the time of all my friends, you know, everybody has new jobs now than when you first in high school and you're just kind of hanging out in the basement. My favorite thing about gaming is the really insular jokes, the inside jokes that will develop out of it, which for a very limited number of people, like for four people, is the funniest thing in the world, which nobody else on the planet would understand. And my favorite, absolute favorite inside joke, which I'll share with you, was I was running a game. It was a fantasy game that we did. Caveat, one of the hardest things about my group of friends and I about gaming is that we were all really, really cheap. So we never devoted a lot of money into buying game books. And we would just kind of like find one and develop our own game system and story off of that. So we used GURPS a lot. So we were running this fantasy.
It's our theory that there's a GURPS book for everything. Yes. Like, if they keep splitting the atom, eventually a GURPS book will fall out.
right.
Right next to the boson.
Yeah.
And so one of the ways I liked to run games was I wasn't as concerned with actual number stats, which for some people is not how you roleplay. But for me, I was just more concerned about the group setting and everybody having fun and, you know, just doing things that are entertaining. So a lot of times, if somebody wanted to perform an action, you know, regardless of what their stats were, if I thought that if they had a good idea, then I would give them a chance to pull it off. And there was this very wonderful situation with one of my good friends, my good friend Josh, who is a co-writer on the comic I do called Time Agent Z, which can be found in Science Hero, which is a comic available on newhavencomics.com. He was playing this pirate character, and the group of characters were all together, and they were trying to get passage to another continent, and so he was going to try and lie his way onto a ship. So they went to a harbor, and they found a ship that was mostly empty, didn't look like there was a lot of people there, just a guard on the ship, and he said he was going to walk up to them and lie his way, figure out a way onto the ship. And I said, okay, what are you going to do? He walks up to the guy, and in character he says, "This is my ship." And there was this pause. Everybody in the group goes, "Ah," because I don't know why they decided he was going to be the one to go lie for everybody, because they knew he didn't have the best verbal skills, but for whatever reason it was his idea, so they were going to let him do it. So he goes up, declares that it's his ship, and of course I'm playing the game, and the character that he's talking to is the first mate of the ship. And the character looks at him and says, "No, you're not." And I tried to give him an opportunity to try and lie his way further, and he just said, "No, I own this ship." And so of course the first mate pulls out a gun and attacks him. Well, from there, their whole plan of getting onto a ship was completely derailed, because now they get in trouble with authorities, and some of them go to jail, and their whole plan was derailed. But that's like my absolute favorite joke, the inside joke between all of my friends, is whenever anybody has an idea for anything, everybody says, "Oh, just tell them it's your ship." And it's guaranteed to not work. So that's, like I said, that's my favorite inside incident.
This is Patrick Leeson, and you've reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
The second story I want to tell you about is actually from a time when I went to Gen Con with actually my buddy Chris, this GM that I told you about previously. Chris and I played in a lot of Chris's games, but we had never actually played together. He didn't play much. He mostly GM'd. So we looked around and we found this game that we could both play in because we both had the time slots free, and it was called Gate War. Now, this was probably the worst this was one of the worst games that I've ever played, but I didn't know anything going into it. So part of the premise of the world is that there are all these gates all over the place, and they all go places, but you know, most of them don't go anywhere good. And some of them are only one way. Well, our party knew about this gate that went to this this fortress that we could pillage, because you know, our entire motivation here was that we needed money, that we were broke and we wanted to eat. So our big plan was to, you know, we had a bunch of this equipment. And our plan was to go through the gate, raid the keep, take what was there, and come back. Now, another thing you need to know about Gate War is that everyone can cast spells. This comes up later. So anyway, we go through this gate, and we arrive at the keep, and the GM is describing the keep to us. And so we go into the first room, and we're like, okay, cool, what's here? And the GM looks down at his sheet, rolls a couple of dice, and says, you're in the treasure room. And we're like, wait, what? Treasure room? Well, yes, we're in the treasure room. Okay, so we start asking the GM questions. What else? What kind of treasure is here? Oh, all kinds of treasure. Really? Like what? Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Crazy stuff. So is there gold? Oh, yeah, there's lots of gold. What about weapons and armor? Oh, yeah, tons of weapons and armor all over the place. Well, is there like a spear? Oh, yeah, there are spears. There are all kinds of weapons. Great. Okay, great. I go grab one of the spears. He looks down at his sheet, rolls a die, and says, there are no spears. Okay, well, what about swords? Can I grab a sword? Looks down, rolls the dice. Yes, there's a magic sword there. Okay. It took us about 30 or 40 minutes, I think, to pull all of the details out of him. All the time we would ask him a question, he would look down at his sheet, he would roll a die, and he would give us an answer. So we finally took everything of use in the room and decided that, hey, now that we have all this nifty new stuff, we can go really kick some ass. So we go into the next room, and we come into a big fight. And the GM says, okay, this dragon-like thing. I'm like, okay. So we go through most of one round of combat, which every player in the group acts. And then it gets to the bad guy's turn. And the GM looks down at his sheet and says, oh, this is like the most difficult monster in the game. He's like the toughest thing around. And we all kind of look at each other and look at him. He's huge. He fills up the room. Oh my God. And we're all, you know, I'm sitting here looking at this guy thinking, you know, this is useful information that I could have had before I decided to attack it. So the GM kind of intentionally flubbed it so that the dragon thing attacked someone and missed. And I kind of looked at everybody and I said, you know, we wanted money out of this, right? And everybody said, yeah. Well, we have money. Why don't we just leave? And so we left. Well, unfortunately, the gate that we came through was only one way, so we had to walk the long way. And in this world, we had an encounter on the way back, a random encounter with this, basically this magical parasite that would go to whomever had the most magic at the time, the most personal magic, and would drain them of that magic. Now, so what happened was we're attacked by this parasite. The parasite goes after the person with the highest number of magic points, and that person kind of panics and casts a spell, and so the person with the highest number of magic points switches to a different person, and the parasite goes after that person instead. Well, after this happens two or three times, you know, the parasite coming at somebody, they'll cast a spell, and then the parasite will get really interested in somebody else, and they'll cast a spell. Finally, one of the other players says, you know, I just let it get me. I just let it get me. And the GM's like, yeah, you'll be fine. It's just gonna drain some magic, and then you'll be fine. And So at this point, I am desperate for something interesting to happen because I've been sitting here for like 3 hours. I haven't had any fun. Like, I haven't been able to get any of the good stuff out of this game that I really wanted. You know, no camaraderie. I can't kick butt with my friends. So I look over at – I kind of lean over to Chris and I say, okay, just follow my lead here. And in character, I stand up and I shout out, my brother was attacked by one of these parasites, and he was never the same since. He's possessed. It possessed him, turned into a horrible, horrible man, a monster, and we must stop him before this happens again. And then my character launched himself at the other character and promptly decided to try to beat the snot out of him. Punching only. Well, the GM couldn't handle that. So what happened, you know, we're 15, 20 miles outside of town. The town guard happens to show up because apparently they have a patrol route that goes 20 miles outside of town. And they pull us apart and march us back to town. And no, we didn't get any rolls for any of that. So the final kicker here was that at the end of the game, the GM asked everybody to vote on who was the best role player. And I got it. And the prize was $5 off of a copy of Gate War. I never used the prize.
One shots, different games, one shot at a time.
All right, my name is Andre Fauché. As you guys have heard, I work here on Gamers Haven Podcast, and I am responsible for a lot of the actual play.
I'm Jessica Smith, the person who giggles behind all the sinister acts I have, who usually tags along with Andre on everything.
I'm Amanda. I've probably the most recent out of the Lawrence crew. I've done a few series, New Hope, City of Angels, and a few one-shots.
I'm Ryan Childers. I've been in several of Andre's games, pretty much all of them except for Wizards College. And I think is that it?
Anything that was involved in Kansas City you haven't been in.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Which includes, what, Warhammer 40K? And
yeah, oh, that's true. I was
a few other ones. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My goodness.
What can I say, Andre? We're together.
Togetherness.
Oh, goodness.
Aww.
Aww. How
that's what I do. Sort of you know, that the more you know thing from it.
Okay, so let's see. One of our most infamous and favorite moments was, maybe you guys have heard, the episode involving Dr. Wicked's evil game show, where each of the heroes had to go through various death traps.
Yeah, this is a City of Angels, by the way.
I have no idea what episode. Like a million ago. So go ahead and go through each of your guys' various death traps, and I'll cover...
I'm assuming the first one, not the second one, because we've been two.
Yeah, go through the first death trap.
The first one.
Yeah. All right. Well, most memorable part for me, aside from laughing at Victor the entire time...
I think that was the most memorable part.
was trying to,
chicken. Sorry.
Was going actually through the gorilla pit and proving to be the alpha male against all the gorillas. Oh. And feeling really bad because I one-shotted it. Oh. Poor gorilla. In a tutu.
So did PETA call us on that one?
Not yet.
That's good.
They're protesting Zerglings now, so.
They're what?
They, yes. in a publicity sense, they've protested Zerglings because they're being mistreated or whatever.
Fictional alien creature.
They Zerglings did Pokemon, have too.
They're trying to get a publicity stunt.
I think I was late to that episode.
Yes, you were actually late to that episode.
I missed the first part of it.
So you didn't really know what was going on. You just wound up in the middle of the
I was just like, where am I? I mean, what?
Why am I, what, gorillas? Huh? Lasers?
We ended up choosing, like, the perfect death trap for each person, really. It was, we were actually pretty amazed.
Did you you couldn't run on water yet, could you?
We were depowered.
But she could at that time.
I could, yeah.
Oh, you were depowered. Oh, yeah, I'm in a suit.
You were the only, you were in your suit, so you were good. But the moment we stepped through our doors, we lost our powers, and so, you know, the crocodile pit with the girl on the island that
you stripped all your clothes.
I did.
Yes. A young male with an attractive young woman.
Just the clothes just start flying.
Yeah. It's
only natural.
Yeah. It was supposed to be a distraction.
It was distracting somebody.
It was a distraction.
You're supposed to be saving her, not distracting her.
And it didn't help that the costume was white. And so, you know, white undergarments, and so. And he kept rolling ones on his acrobatics to jump, so he'd only go about 4 feet before he
and
plunged
then get the
into
water.
The
flopping in the water.
Yeah, getting death rolled by an alligator. Yeah. Or was it crocodiles?
I don't know. Ask the person who actually studies animals.
I think they were crocodiles.
Scaly, chompy thingy. With lasers.
By the end, he was just in his underwear.
And you had a giant-ass bite in your leg.
And what's funny is that she followed suit.
She did. She started taking off her clothes, and
she's like, oh, no!
It was so funny. Everyone else was like, yeah, I beat up gorillas. Yeah, I dodged lasers. They walk out, see you, and like, did you have a wet t-shirt on?
That was my gauntlet.
I lost.
Man, you got the long end of
And it didn't help that it was being, televised live on the news.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was...
Mask and soaked through underwear. I think maybe that's why you're so popular.
Yeah.
maybe Luke needs to design that one.
I feel like game shows were Elijah's thing. Luke wants to stay out of it.
Everything was Elijah's
thing. Which not so
thing.
Much in the reality TV?
Yeah, no.
Okay.
He likes selling products, something people can hold in their hand.
Well, you can certainly have the accelerator toy.
Oh!
Yes, the battle damage accelerator whose clothes come off.
Easily removable.
He probably wouldn't do that with his son. Maybe.
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 Maybe he doesn't sell it as his son. Someone
yes.
else.
Well.
All right, and what was your death trap?
There was a laser and a walkway, a moving sidewalk.
Oh, yes, that's
and
right.
And then I dug down into it, I think. He didn't take... Did he not take my gauntlets? I don't remember at this point.
No, I don't think he did.
So I dug down in there, or pulled it up anyway, and went underneath the laser.
Always wrecking my game shows.
I know. I'm just destructive.
Bypassed it. Like, I could do this. Or I can just do this.
And I have to say, I really liked Dr. Wicked's Disco Foo. He was perhaps one of my favorite fighters, designing an entire combat style around Disco.
If I remember correctly, he pretty much mauled Victor that whole time.
Just about every episode, Victor gets mauled somehow.
Yeah.
Because Victor,
sorry
for some
to say,
reason...
But yeah.
He's kind of the whipping boy.
He stops. And then as soon as he stops...
The entire opposite in my game, our speedster, I can't... Nothing touches. Right? He's like, I run in, run out. I'm like 4,000 miles away. I'm like, okay then.
But she does that too. It's just the people keep having
the difference is, I don't think Blue Streak has encountered the mercenary yet.
Yeah,
who apparently is one of the most dangerous people.
You just need to send me the stat the file for him.
C's initiative is wonderful for catching speedsters.
Yes.
And then harpoon
gun.
The harpoon gun. Well, it didn't help that he rolled like a 20 on his initiative, and I rolled a 1. It was literally natural 20, natural 1.
Yeah.
And
his
so
harpoon is perhaps the most effective thing.
He harpooned him, shot him in the head.
And then he was
and
down.
And now you're romancing
And then he was
him.
Out.
You're right, you regenerate.
Yeah, exactly.
Andre's upset at me that I turned two of my villains into allies.
Each of us was supposed to have 4 villains, and then she converts 2 of them.
to come up with two more.
Yes.
I had to come up with
one,
two more.
One was the mercenary. He was supposed to be my villain because mm-hmm. he was a former romance. But since he went villain and I'm a hero, it was that Batman Catwoman thing.
Batman Robin. That one was recorded for CanCon, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
That was.
We were all in that game, in fact.
No. Yes.
Well,
yeah, you were there too.
It was a different one. It was
and
somebody
else. Steven helped in the teaming.
Yeah, let's. Yeah, Steven.
Yeah.
The best supervillain you guys have encountered so far. He was on your team.
Yeah.
Free will? Meh, I'm rich.
Whom I liberally stole to create a supervillain in my game.
Yes. And then there was Patrick.
Oh, yeah.
The arms of Creed.
Yes, who helped design my battle suit, but then started selling products to arm our villains.
Now he works for
the
army.
What's wrong with having mantra railguns handed out to common thugs?
Yeah.
I don't see a problem with those. Yes, they hurt.
They hurt.
The mobsters really have need of them, don't they?
Yeah, and something's going to be coming up in City of Angels here soon where there's going to be an entire shenanigans revolving around Mortimer Glass and his faction of crime.
Oh, boy.
Mortimer Glass is finally going. Is finally taking off the kitty gloves. I think the first place that he has to bomb is the ice cream shop.
Oh, no! Oh, the grandfather memories!
All of the memories.
I know, that's Gwen's from Glass 2!
True villainy isn't destroying the planet, it's destroying the ice cream shop that the superheroes visit.
That's what I'm
Take something you know, small. Take, yeah. Your taco
baby
shop
steps,
has to die.
Baby
yeah, taco shop and the pizza place. Gotta
listen
go.
To me. You'll have to get out. They're trying to take my tortillas.
Threatening Olympus in the world? No. You threatened the tacos and pizza? We're done.
They must die.
All right, noted.
Well, you know, the way you usually make your villains evil is they, you know, kill babies or rape people or something crazy.
Or vice let's, versa. Or,
yeah, let's go off kilter. Like, I still have, I have yet to unleash him.
Guy
but
with fingers.
Oh, yeah.
Carter Cutter.
Yeah.
One of my favorite characters.
He came back recently.
Yeah.
He will be coming up in a new episode after some new experimentation.
Yeah.
This was after my stint of playing Shadowrun, so that might give you give you a little bit of a hint what happened to him.
And guess who gets smurfed in the butt? Did I use that correctly?
Yes, you did.
Although your alliteration leaves little to the imagination.
You could have said rear.
Doesn't matter, you'd still know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Yes,
good guess.
I was like, yeah.
It's always
Besides,
Victor.
Like, the big name
say,
villains, who do you guys think would be the most notorious or memorable villains you guys think, besides just Power Cutters?
I'll leave that one to you guys, because I have my own list.
Most memorable, well, other than Dr. Wicked?
Well, we definitely remember, okay, the Char.
Yeah, I hate Char.
He's just one of those guys that...
He's probably the least favorite, like, the fight that I hated
the
most was fighting Char.
What's wrong with burning down a mall full of innocent people? They obviously committed some sort of crime. They're in L.A. They have to have committed a crime to live in L.A.
Isn't that another one there somewhere?
And I think another one was, for a while, we thought he was going to be a reoccurring villain, but he ended up getting killed, was that one that was stealing our identities right in the...
The doppelganger?
The one who fell out of
you
building.
Killed?
No, Steven killed him.
No.
I almost killed myself.
No, gravity.
Gravity
killed him.
Body ejected out of a window on the 13th floor.
He survived. And then...
And then Steven killed him.
Gravity is a harsh mistress.
You win again, Gravity.
I feel like the explodey guy was also pretty memorable.
You guys actually have... The listeners haven't encountered him yet. Collateral damage?
Oh, no. I was thinking Death's...
Oh, Death's Hallow.
Like... Yeah.
Oh, the one that could... Oh, the one where the
Red Assault.
Assault. Yeah. Last Stand.
Yeah. That was also a very, very memorable series for me.
Arc. Part of the funniness of that... The part I chuckled the most on was when I did the miscalculations converting to third edition. I thought that his explosion was approximately 6 miles wide.
And how big was it?
It was actually supposed to be about 1,800 feet.
Yeah, that'll take out L.A.
Yeah, this nice little chunk of L.A. just kind of disappeared.
1,800 really? Feet, is that diameter or radius?
Radius.
It's barely over a half a mile.
Yeah, but remember, you can do that every 6 seconds. I mean...
Yeah, that's pretty bad to deal with.
Mm-hmm. I personally like the... Is that that's a guy who, when he teleported, he would explode?
Yep. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That guy
I'm
going to
steal that, by the way.
You should.
Isn't that the nice thing about working with people in the, quote, industry? That's a good idea. Thanks. It's copywritten for Gamers Haven. Oh, wait!
Quote Steve Jobs, good artists innovate, great artists steal.
In the small village of Dundreville, three brothers are spurred into action when an ogre decides to raid the village, burn down the blacksmith shop, and claim two of the citizens. The Link brothers, rather than see their fair village taken advantage of, decided to head out to do some justice. However, upon returning triumphant, they find their village has been attacked and the majority of the folk has been kidnapped and possibly bound for slavery. The first step into the long, hard road that is adventuring is a dangerous one. But will the brothers become legends or wind up dead, unarmored, in a ditch? Pathfinder. Brothers.
Thanks. That's, I've never said that to me before.
Okay, we've now cornered Becca.
It's not fair.
No, it's not at all. But, you know, our listeners want to hear more about you and why you tolerate Nathan and everything, that sort of thing.
Amen.
But I know...
The benefits outweigh the...
You used to think you weren't a good player.
That's true.
Do you still think that?
Well, that's a loaded question.
Because I think there are, you know, five people in here who tell you you are a good player.
It depends on who you're playing with.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people who are better than me, but
you were like
I've played
one,
with...
I like your curiousness.
You were like one of my favorite players, Becca.
Because I don't make waves.
Yes, and you're genuinely interested.
Yeah, and you're so chill about it. And lighthearted.
That's why I get along with everybody.
Yeah.
Unlike me. I get more arguments with him.
Our relationship's rocky.
Do you have a favorite character that you've played?
Probably my first one that I ever played.
Which one was that?
It was a D&D character. It was a rogue elf, which is what all girls like.
A Relf?
A Relf.
She was stabby. Invisible stabby.
Stabby, invisible stabby McStabbykins?
Yes. She was awesome. And then she got killed.
Was this game run by anyone we know?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was Lawrence. Lawrence Ian, though. But you probably don't know him.
Who?
His name was Grant.
Last name.
I don't remember. Mason might remember. I don't know. He used to hang out at the coffee shop all the time. Go Likes ahead. To play games. He taught me how to play backgammon. He was in the running before Nathan came along, but he only likes Asian girls, so I was out anyway. Anywho, not really a gaming story.
It's gaming related.
But it came from a... It evolved from a gaming stable.
If you want to continue talking about gaming and romance, that's actually where Jessica and I met. We met at a Call of Cthulhu game.
Believe it or not.
I was playing my... pervy parapsychologist who no one would want to
be. Was this one of Nathan's games or someone else's?
No, someone else's.
Okay. It was in Justin's game, which is its own...
A mutual friend of ours.
Fair.
I was playing my pervy parapsychologist, and nobody would want to get alone in a room with him, male or female. because, well, he went into parapsychology because, well, it's the easiest degree at college. Unfortunately for him, he was in a Call of Cthulhu universe. He didn't realize it.
Oh.
And
oh dear.
Jessica was...
I was actually a criminal. But I was still in the whole phase of the lone wolf thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I would constantly kind of do my own thing and go off on my own, which is a horrible idea to call it a Cthulhu game.
Generally, that's a way to die. Quickly, in fact.
She
yes.
has this creepy stalker guy who would follow her everywhere.
I'm personally proud that I made it through two Call of Cthulhu campaigns without ever getting Cthulhu Mythos points.
Whoa.
because I refused to read anything. And would burn the books if handed to me.
I think in both of Nathan Call of Cthulhu's games, I died.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah.
I already died.
And ironically, I lived!
No, in this game, I actually died, but I never actually got the Cthulhu mythos, because, you know, I wasn't interested in the books. I was more interested in selling them.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was the money.
Let someone else go crazy.
And then when I realized that he had money, I started to hang out with him.
Like his character or Andre?
Yeah, his character.
Because Andre's Mr. Moneybags here.
Oh, yeah. Let me talk about this huge student teacher salary.
But out of character, because of the way he played his character, I'm like, who the hell is this guy? Because it was like, and it was off the ball, and then it was like,
so you guys hadn't met before you game together? So it was like friends.
We waved at each other because our lockers were nearby.
And we had classroom things for that. That's all we knew. We never actually knew who each other were. Until we went into the Call of Cthulhu game, and then we had mutual friends.
So, like me and Nathan and Jeremy, I went to high school with them, but didn't know them in high school.
That happened with
I, in fact, thought he was a scumbag during high school.
Yeah, what did you do?
I went all the way from junior high with Jeremy and never met him.
We went to West too.
Was in the West, choir drama department, and I thought the drama department had way too much drama.
I stayed out of that crowd.
But then you, once again, Justin, who we no longer hang out with, however, was ironically the catalyst for almost all of us hanging out.
He
invited you to a game, and we kept you and kicked Justin out.
Justin sort of kicked himself out.
It's not my fault. Every session, he wanted to play a new character. Do you know how obnoxious that is to try and run a game for?
Do you know how obnoxious it is when he tries to run a game and then plays it for two sessions and then wants to move on to another?
Yes, in fact, I do!
I think we can all sympathize with that and from a few people in this house.
No names will be mentioned.
No names will be mentioned. Although I did run a werewolf game that went two sessions.
There's a difference between having a game that dies and doing it consistently.
Yeah.
I've had games that did that, one or two sessions.
You played a werewolf game that had two sessions?
I think it had one or two.
Did the GM quit it, or did it just die?
It just died. I played it at your house.
Okay, I remember that one. That was Nathan who was attempting to run it. This was actually right around the time where he was playing. It was a hybrid group. There was a hunter, a werewolf. Jeremy was in it, a few other folks. So he tried to just start one up. It lasted a couple sessions. Then
Nathan was I was in that game. I was the hunter in that game.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was running that that was happening simultaneously, and he had a few ideas of his own to try to start up a game.
What I really wanted to play was a werewolf, but Nathan and Robin were already playing them. So I was like, damn.
Well, now the new edition of Hunter's actually worth a spit.
Yeah.
I don't think you were in this one.
This must have been something.
No, this was a small game.
The one I'm talking about is one that Jeremy ran.
I wasn't in
that
one.
Yes.
So about the same time, Nathan decided to run something for you guys. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And pulled in Becca. That's really where we started to get to know Becca.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was a bad place to... I was playing an Irish girl, and I can't do an Irish accent. I'm like, this sucks.
Should we talk about my bad accents?
I love your accents.
Your British accents that ended up being Australian? There's my French one that just ended up being British. I'm not going to try that anymore.
One listener who emailed me saying, Andre, I find your Japanese accent almost offensive.
Sorry. Yeah. I'm glad you get email. You get some feedback, you know.
Bad accents reminds me of, what was it? The Halloween special.
Oh, yes.
Which one? For City of Angels.
The City of Angels Halloween episode.
And Oni, a Dullahan.
Oh, right, right.
Oh, it was like a ghoul.
A
Chinese dragon and a ghoul.
Uh-huh. The regular team went on vacation or something?
They went on vacation and were...
We were at a party.
A party in Washington, D.C. with the Compact.
And so you guys played the...
magical side, because your regular people are on the science side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
And they encounter the far more dangerous reserve members than the actual members. If the reserve members are protecting the city, nothing happens. But if the regular peers are there, something always goes wrong.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
So they're glad when the angels leave town.
Yeah, because
the crime rate goes down when the heroes leave. Odd how that works.
Jacob and Zero have the whole town on lockdown.
And then nothing can hurt Nikolai. Yeah.
Yeah. That was interesting.
But bad accents in the Halloween one, huh?
We had Jessica, who was a ghoul, which was awful. And Steven, the entire session, screamed.
Yeah.
Because he was playing an intense character, so intense deceit meant screaming.
Yeah.
So the entire night, he was screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the doll, huh?
Your Oni was the best, though, honey.
The Oni was hilarious. The terrible accent.
Hey, it was legit.
Is that the one where you started speaking in Japanese?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because
we were in the middle of our Japanese class.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You guys were in the middle of your Japanese class, and you guys had a lot of experience with the foreign exchange program in Japan, so you guys actually have some first-hand experience.
It was... I was screaming on the inside. I was like, oh, this is so bad. But it was fun. I actually like playing with accents, but I keep forgetting Victor has a British accent. He has American accent in costume, and then British accent out.
It's okay. Apparently, all my British people are Australian. Apparently, Australia counter-colonized England.
That's an interesting thought.
It's okay. Predominantly, the British people that you play are criminals, and so I mean that just fits that they're Australian.
Well, considering Australia was a dumping ground for prisoners,
yes.
So it's counter-colonized.
But your orc accents, I just can't get enough of.
Which apparently is slowly becoming the official Gabbergluck accent.
Apparently, yes.
Yeah.
I have no control over things like that, so okay.
Speaking of that, when Justin and I, when he was in that game, we did the Orc Brothers, Fang and Stomp.
Oh, Stomp and Fang.
Yes.
The two half-orc thugs.
Oh, that was a blast.
One was a barbarian, one was a sorcerer, and every turn it'd be, Stomp! Fang! Stomp! Because whenever they did something, they had to call out their names. Because they're half-orcs.
There was a game of Jeremy's where my character died, and then at the same time his brother Andrew, his character died, and so we decided we were gonna play characters that were linked somehow, and so we decided to play these landlocked pirates that had, I forget where we were, I think we were actually in hell. And throughout the whole session, we were talking like pirates, like this. At the end of that session, we both were like, we gotta not do this here. Because we could not speak. We were so hoarse. We just went to Jeremy's like, yeah, those characters just leave. Can't do that anymore. And it's not like, well, we could change our accents. Like, no, they just have to go.
Let's see, some other fun characters that have cropped up in my games. Oh my goodness, I've had plenty of one-shot characters that became...
Bex.
I had this goblin advisor.
Isn't it always entertaining how sometimes the players will just latch onto that one person that's just supposed to be a throwaway? Mm-hmm. And you're like, I guess I'll have to give him a last name.
I had
a first name.
There's supposed to be this goblin advisor. I was running this evil game where it was essentially like Dungeon Keeper. They were building their own dungeon, attracting adventurers. And he was this little goblin advisor, and people were like, he's obviously one of the most badass characters in your setting. I was like, why? Well, he's advising these people. He's got this long list of people. And so they've been slowly tacking on, oh, obviously this cataclysmic event was related to this goblin. So he's just slowly getting this repertoire of this incredibly badass goblin who's like a million years old, is what just slowly tottering along.
Like, he's an older,
age as a goblin. He did something.
It's that whole concept of you're walking down the street and you see a lone kobold. You know that that kobold is a bad
so
person.
So you see a lone elderly goblin walking alone.
People you're like, dude, that's like Yoda.
Did we meet him in the Dragon's Game, or was that Lake Castle?
You met him in Lake Castle because he was orchestrating another orcish rise and fall.
That's right.
He would sit there and tell an orc war boss how to win, because he's a wizard, he's a strategist. And then just when the heroes come to kill the orcish war boss, they go, well, I'm done, and he leaves.
He was also in the High Seas Game.
That's true, he was there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yes, he was. He was a reoccurring character there.
My character dealt with him, not the group.
The High Seas Game was with the half. That bad guy that just had
That was the one there.
Template
upon template upon multi-class upon multi-class. He had four classes, one of which was a prestige class, and three different templates. By the end of it, they were level 17. He had 100 hit points. Even the wizard was going.
Dragon, half fiend,
half... He was half fiend.
Theron was the problem with stacking templates.
Yeah.
I have all this cool stuff, but I have 10 hit points.
It was still 3.5, also.
We were going to have the epic battle, and then I killed him with Phantasmal Killer on the like, round...
Because the roll save was a plus 3. At level 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous.
But you guys in the Wizards College actually have met one of the characters from that game.
Oh, yeah.
Cal Fu, the half-dragon mummy.
That was him.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
You guys actually met him. And the personality where he was just kind of wishy-washy, just kind of, whatever.
That's right.
Mind you, he wasn't a mummy in our game.
I do remember that. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, a silver half-dragon Anubian sorcerer.
Were you silver?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I thought you were...
No, because he wanted the mohawk.
Yeah. No, I didn't want the mohawk. I hated the mohawk.
Well, now it's a mummified mohawk.
Yes, I know.
Ooh. Yes, it's one of the most memorable games, but it was also one of the games where I had a horrible time in it.
She was playing a lawful character on a pirate ship.
Ooh. I was a lawful good dwarven samurai surrounded by a bunch of chaotic characters.
Yeah, I could see where that would be a problem.
Yes. Yeah. I made it about halfway through the campaign until I suddenly just broke down.
I can't.
I let her go and just be an NPC.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started my multi-class fighter rogue assassin.
Well, that sounds like fun.
She was playing Assassin's Creed at the time, so...
Yeah, I had some inspiration.
Out of one of the stories that is most memorable for me is actually Lake Castle, which is something all of you guys have been involved in the creation thereof.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That started out, I said like 5 years ago, you guys are entering a phase of my campaign setting, which were the Dark Ages. Intolerant, doesn't like magic, no progress. And these group of folks right here said, that's bullshit.
Screw that.
Screw that. And so they went and built their own town. The orcish warlord, Mori, he was called Gut Ripper at the time, and he was trying to destroy Old Well because he had gotten thrown out because his mother had birthed a half-orc.
Mm-hmm.
In a dwarven city.
So they threw them out, and he swore revenge. So he went and killed his father, took control of the tribe, and was in the process of going about and annihilating this entire area. Well, the group finally cut their way up to him past Ball Ripper. Ryan will give you a story on Ball Ripper.
That's a good story.
And they finally got to him, and he was sitting there calmly playing the piano. And they're like, who is this guy? This is the war boss? He's like, I'm Gut Ripper. And they're like, well, you're very well spoken. Well, thank you. I do wish to do honorable battle with you. Oh, I think that's quite acceptable. Yes, would you like to do that now? I do believe that is acceptable. And so they were sitting there fighting, and the building was slowly coming down. And they said, you know what, you're not quite such a bad guy. We forgive you of your sins. Would you like to come with us? And so he goes, I guess.
I don't want to die. So.
No. We did knock him unconscious.
You did knock him unconscious. Oh, you knocked him unconscious and then saved him.
Yeah,
yes.
Saved him from the building that was crawling.
And then you guys found out he was a half-orc, but he actually had the bloodline of a long-lost noble house before the Great Green War.
Who's actually one of my former characters.
And so
her last name was Mori.
The group decided, obviously, we're going to go start our own town, and this guy should be the king.
None of us can be the king.
Well, we had the kingdom to start out with, and we were debating, well, we can't really have the council as the head, because we're always out doing stuff, mm-hmm. so we need someone to stay here. You have a noble bloodline, and it makes perfect sense.
So this orcish warlord, the one who had been marauding...
And he had experience.
So when you guys encounter...
You took a look at his CV.
Yes.
Well...
So you guys have seen the yearly event where it shows, you know, the defeating of the arch-villain Gut Ripper, where the heroes came to be known and Lake Castle was founded, and King Mori always looks a little bit bummed. It's because every year he watches his own ass get kicked.
That didn't happen that way.
it was a tougher fight than that.
Yeah, he actually hit me pretty good.
And Pyro, which was Jessica's character, every time after game, she asked, can I spar with him? Because Jessica's always interested in trying to prove her character's worth. So she'd say, can I spar with him? And that's how that romance blossoms. So every time you guys come back to town and see the king and queen fighting over something, that's a herald back to Jessica and Mori going,
because he was a lot higher level than we were, technically. Uh-huh.
At first.
So I wanted to spar with him and finally defeat him one-on-one.
So that's why you guys get to see that. They met Taran, the beardless dwarf.
Yeah, we saved him.
Who shaved his beard out of dishonor.
I wanted to save the lives of slaves.
No. Alex was playing the samurai whose corpse you guys encountered.
And Jonathan the druid.
The druid, who hangs out in the forest and actually tells people to come in and kill stuff because... People actually listened to the druid and, you know, made sure two grew wherever one fell, so now they've got overpopulation problems. People actually listened to the druid for once. The druid wasn't expecting it.
Yeah.
So, Lake Castle's been something that all of you guys have been involved in, and mm-hmm. in terms of setting stuff, all of you guys have had a big impact. Like, Becca, Jenna, the only dwarf hero I have seen in the past 3 or 4 years, you actually managed to get the Darkroom Dwarves convinced that they should actually allow one brand of magic. Your brand of magic, Abjuration. So, Becca,
it's a good magic.
It is a good magic. And you managed to change one of my most stubborn factions in my campaign setting.
I don't even know how. But...
You were a hero who helped end the war between Anubia and...
Oh, Deborah. So they just heard of me.
There were those others, but there was a dwarf.
Who was a wizard. Okay, she helped Dugrum, and she was a wizard. It can't be that bad. And she had a gun, so I mean, hot chick, guns, magic. I mean, what do you want? So yeah, Lake Castle's been a work in progress for years.
It's slowly gotten bigger and bigger, and we've had glimpses of it in the future. Mm-hmm. When Prince Bradley is King Bradley.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was during our New Hope campaign. Yeah, we visited that. That's my only experience.
Oh, well, I suppose we can tell you how we met Bradley. Do you know how?
Who's Bradley?
Prince Bradley.
The prince that you guys rescued, the crown prince.
Yeah.
Okay.
Remember. He became a paladin. He was captured to the other dark.
I thought all of those ones died.
No, they were the only two that didn't die.
Yes.
I thought they were dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was it the knight, the good guy who was protecting him that died? Was there?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the rogue who was a half-orc friend, companion, and then samurai, and then there was the prince and the elf.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
It's been a while.
It only happens, you know, a few times a month.
Yeah, and I'm old, so.
You just have my memory.
Better than his memory.
Well, basically the main villain towards the end of the Lake Castle was this godlike person who I just hated.
Radok Eversole, I love him.
I just despised him.
I love him.
But, yeah. So, yeah, Andre told you about this, that he would... You know, go around slaughter entire villages, but keep two people alive. A child and, you know, an adult. One to tell the story and one to grow up to eventually defeat him. Bradley was one of the children that was left behind in the ruins. And Andre rolled the dice to see which character the child ran to, and he ran to my character, and which my character then adopted him.
So, well, that was good of you.
Mm-hmm. She was like 19 with an 8-year-old kid.
Yep.
Tough. That's pretty tough.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
This poor woman who has no relationship whatever because she wasn't with Maori at the time adopts this kid, and then her parents are like, "All right, you need to get married." God damn it! You know, have a kid, they need a father figure, otherwise he's not going to grow up correct. And not be proper.
Those kind of parents.
Yes.
Well, it's the Dark Ages.
So yeah, I was actually going to the. I was going to marry the merchant.
Bergie.
Bergie.
The scum bucket.
Yeah, that was the main plan.
Whose plan was that?
My parents.
Marry the wealthiest guy in town.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's a good. That's good parent plan.
Yeah.
Because they can.
So yeah. But
and
then
you can take care of us when we're invalids.
Yeah. So then my character. Thinking about it afterwards was very out of character for her because, you know, she was a lawful good and this seemed like a very random act to try and get away from her responsibilities. But she feigned a mortal injury that kept her away from the wedding. And then it was actually one of the other players, Tyler, was a wizard and he was illusioning the injury, and it was actually then that Maury proposed in a very mild way to Pyra. He just handed her a ring. He didn't actually say anything.
Did they know her?
Yeah.
Yeah, they fought several times.
Yeah. Was he interested? Or was it just kind of a,
No.
Get you out of your situation.
Warrior woman.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
of course, the half-orc former war chief.
He didn't know what he was getting into, apparently.
Huh?
I said he didn't know what he was getting into, apparently.
He did. Have you ever heard him say that he regrets it? Are you kidding me? last session. So I see you and the queen got into a fight over a horse. Well, it's a fine horse. Damn right it's a fine horse!
Yeah.
Are you talking about the screw up with the whole the jailbreak attempt?
What? No.
Which one was that one?
Last session. All right.
Oh yeah.
Cast the genie. Well, I'm not casting the genie. I thought you were casting the djinn. Well, no. I thought you were casting the djinn. I'm handling the explosion. Well, you were supposed to cast the djinn. I'm an alchemist. How can I cast an illusion? Oh yeah.
That was so funny. I can't wait for the listeners to hear that one. Okay, so who's to... Wait, what? I thought you were... What? Ethan, did you cast... Oh, wait, he was
How
the one who's
teleported. How many of us were invisible at the time?
Yeah.
Everyone but one.
No, I shoot the bus driver.
Is that Wizards College?
Yeah, that's Wizards College. They were breaking into a prison to rescue somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And they
had
this huge, elaborate plan. It was 30 minutes. I was like, this is going to work well. And they're going to get away with it. Scott Free for once. And they'll actually see that I don't just come up with things to mess up their plans.
And you go things to mess up their plans.
So I was like, okay, so what do you do? I went around, what do each of you do? And they all did something. I was like, so who's doing the illusion like you guys said? Wait, what? Oh, then, I don't see the illusion, so I have to do this, and then I'll set off the bombs early. Okay, that won't... Okay, well, I run towards the stands to try and stop the person from being executed where the bombs are. Well, I will go ahead and stand back and summon a demon illusion to scare people. So they'll begin running amok, summon towards the stand.
That was panic.
Yeah, we had this plan, and then something happened, and I'm like, shit!
Yeah, I mean, our whole plan went up because of that stupid sensor thing.
Yeah, it was a DC 15 will save at level...
13, 14?
13.
13 as a group of wizards who all have strong will saves.
Oh, wow.
It's DC 15!
That's ridiculous.
It was hysterical. Oh, goodness, it's a DC 15. You have bennies, you know that, right? Yeah, well, I don't want to spend a benny.
What?
Okay!
Okay.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it was interesting.
It was hysterical.
Plans never go well in your games, though.
Except in Dreamland.
Except in Dreamland, yeah. Or in Brothers.
That was... Sometimes.
That one time in Brothers.
Yeah, the one time.
That one time.
I have the Dreamland plan that worked in New Hope.
Yeah.
I think it was, what, me, Steven's character, and then, like, one other...
Tyler, I think.
It wasn't me.
Okay. Uh-huh. One other character had a plan. And we're like, God, this probably won't work.
Yeah, we were expecting it not to work.
It worked perfectly. Like
clockwork.
Yes, like right down to what we planned. Nothing went wrong. And we're like,
huh.
What? And then it never went well again. It must just be Dreamland.
When
we returned to Dreamland, it worked fine.
Yeah. When we tried to fail, that worked just fine. Yeah.
I have these set events, and I'm just kind of like, okay, well, this is what's going to happen.
We all rolled perfectly. I mean, it was...
Yeah, decent.
There were a few times in New Hope where the group actually said, ah, this finally went well.
Yeah.
More often than not, New Hope was, oh my lord, what's going on? Why is this so wrong? Sort of like...
Do you have enough money to resurrect me?
sort of like all of the squirrels changing into naked gnomes and then face-humping Rooney Hula.
The giant half-dragon guy.
Yes,
the
tiny
fighter.
I like had no Benny, and
you were rolling so.
And
hard.
I was rolling like ones and twos every round against freaking squirrels that were what gnome
grappling.
They were gnome.
Yeah, they were squirrels turned into gnomes.
They were trans.
Whatever.
Yes. Ah, that was. I usually don't get frustrated in games, but though that one, I was about to flip a table.
Or the whippy hands, that fight.
My very first game with you guys, his strategy was he turned on his ring, which he then went from medium to large, and so he attracted like everything in the room. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, this will work. The very first swing I do. Critical fumble. And then he drew critical fumble card, and it was, you provoke an attack of opportunity from everybody
around
you.
Which
that was like every
you.
Square. And then there was...
Threatened.
Yes, and then there was...
There's people with reach.
There was people with reach. And in the second round, I was out.
Yeah, 160 hit points? Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah. That was my very first session with you guys.
Yeah.
It was
I guess
all downhill from there.
Yeah,
everyone hated that fight except for the monk. I don't know why. Yeah. Because all he did was disarm you.
Yeah.
I don't know why the monk didn't care.
I guess
she was using a weapon.
The first session shows exactly how your gaming career is going to be for the rest of your life. And that holds true to my characters.
I don't know. Was it your first session when we were in Justin's game where you were the knight lady and you chopped off that dude's head?
Yes.
We threw the grenade on the bottom of a church.
Yes.
And it was a, like...
One hit KO the boss.
Yeah.
On accident.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying.
Yeah. I promise.
It was hilarious. That was a very memorable fight, actually.
Yeah.
One of the only things I remember.
Sorry, when you said lobbing off head and grenades, I was thinking about the Shadowrun game where we lobbed off the vampire's head, put a grenade in your mouth, and then threw it.
Filmed it.
And then filmed
added,
it.
Added graphics and sound effects, and then mailed it to his family.
Yes.
the division that sent them after. Yeah.
Because we were so tired of vampires showing up and trying to get revenge. Yeah. It was like, here's what's gonna happen.
Yep.
Yeah. Poof. You didn't mess with the people in Shadowrun.
No.
Smurf you up.
Yeah.
You really should have recorded that game, but...
It was pretty bad.
But it would have been so awesome.
As long as we edit out half the things that Tyler says, it's perfectly legitimate.
Well, at the beginning, Tyler wasn't even in it.
Yeah, that's true.
It was just three of us.
Yep. Shadowrun. Good system.
Good
setting.
The system's fine.
I am not a fan.
I'm a Mutants and Masterminds person, and that's pretty far from...
Considering when you first started gaming with us, how you said you hated how simple it was.
Yes.
And you hated superheroes.
Yeah, well, no, I actually liked superheroes before we started that game. But it was, like, right
just
before.
Just before.
Yeah. I remember before you actually
yeah.
came with it, you didn't like
it. Was,
so
it was...
When we were talking about, that's the next game we're doing, you're like, oh, I'm not going to play it.
Yeah, I know.
And then
I know.
Convinced you.
Yes. Yes, I was convinced. I will admit to that.
Now we've started an addiction.
Yeah. Do you know how much money I've pumped into the comic book?
Do you want to know how much money and apparently time I have bumped into games?
Yeah.
About yeah. 74 solid days.
Yeah.
And that's just what's
other?
Recorded.
That's just what's recorded.
Yes.
That's not including the stuff that's not recorded.
Yeah, all the
yeah.
games we did beforehand.
Yeah.
Sword and Soul, which crashed and burned into the ground.
Yeah, and Shadowrun. And
the pirate game.
And the pirate game. And,
yeah.
And the Wreck-It-Tron.
And Alex game. And
yeah. I like actually two or three games. So
I've only
you did a fourth ed one.
So let's
I've
see.
Only
other fun,
tried
things, other fun things that we've done in City of Angels. Other memorable stuff.
Well, there was that one time we put Steven in a death trap.
Yeah.
It didn't go very well in my opinion.
It was full on PvP, but.
It was
a. Kind of deserved.
the thing
it
is,
was coming too.
It was that's the thing. I didn't like it because it was PvP. But it was fully justified because he had spent his entire time messing with your lives.
Yeah, he was the one who managed to turn my Victor's girlfriend into a supervillain.
And his therapist.
Mm. No, he was the one who brought the therapist into the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And then he repeatedly mind-controlled Victor. And that day, 20 minutes before the trap, he...
He
crossed the line. And I was
and that's where you got your alternate AU.
Yeah.
And he went to die because of the brass knuckles.
Yes, it was at plus one for the brass knuckles. That
yeah, originally it was not supposed to be PvP at all, but because of incidents previously in the session,
yeah,
the character modified the plan.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, I felt bad because it did make things go to hell, but I was like, felt justified. Victor felt very justified.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain point where a group does have to manage itself. I mean, I had tried to do everything I could, and apparently this was the only thing that was sinking into Steven when the other three team members all ganged up to beat him to a pulp.
Mm-hmm.
It took all three of you attacking him before he realized, I think I might have upset the group.
No matter how many times you told him to stop using his mind control on us.
Yeah.
And the multiple times that I did attack him before that.
Mm-hmm.
It took a dramatic sticking him in the death trap to...
It's probably because I stuck him with his rival.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was another thing. I was getting pissed off at him controlling everyone and getting pissed off at dragging our reputation into the ground
with
the mayor.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, you two... to go through this together.
Yes, that was definitely a memorable session because I actually got contacted by people about it.
You're like, you're on the wanted list.
Well, no, like the listeners. I've had two listeners contact me about that episode.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, and I was like, they're like, you, and I was like, yes, I was justified, and they're like, yeah.
He's so far rated the number one supervillain of City of Angels. You never suspect him because he's on your own team. Sort of like misinformation.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not a happy time, but definitely most memorable.
It's one of the more memorable ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. The chemist fight.
Oh, goodness.
That one was awesome because it was down to the wire, one person against one person still alive.
And
it even went on long enough that people started waking up from unconsciousness,
which
takes at least 10 rounds.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
if Z hadn't woken up,
Victor
would have been
kidnapped.
Yeah.
For a life full of snoo-snoo.
Yeah.
Death by snoo-snoo. She forgot to take off the suit.
Ooh.
Don't give him nightmares.
It was an annoying fight.
Yeah.
I was pissed off at the end of it.
I had a lot of fun in that fight because it was epic.
It was epic. There was a few funny things, like Alec convincing half of his villains that he was
gay.
Yeah, that they were gay for each other. Yeah. That was kind of funny. And Mercenary being the one who actually took out the big bad guy with a rocket launcher.
Yeah. And the bridge in the middle being broken, and me and
getting high on drugs.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, you guys were
got stuck in
you
the,
were so high on drugs. You couldn't
con.
He couldn't
con.
Get out.
Con.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we've had that was one of the. Who was the other? We haven't taken down another big.
No, Mr. Dragon and Madam Agni are the next ones on the list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And those are coming up here in the next few sessions.
Ah. Yep. They're the next.
And then you're going to have an entire time of taking down Dr. Impossible himself.
Yep.
Victor's already had a bad experience with him. You know, we've all windshield wiper impaled through his.
We've all technically fought him.
Yeah, he didn't fight him, that's true. He was just there.
No. Remember, we all attacked him.
No, Victor did not attack him.
No.
Yeah, you bruised him.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yeah.
We managed to bruise him.
Yeah.
I think he had like two or three bruises.
Yeah.
He had two.
He had just taken out two of the party members.
Yeah, but the rest of us were unconscious.
This is a start.
We were learning how he fought.
Yeah.
It was a test run.
Test run. How he fought.
Were we lucky he didn't murder us? Yes.
I'm glad I had Die Hard, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. You're like, dude, that doesn't look... It's starting to seal around it.
You better get that out soon. And then, of course, Alex villain, the lady, the old lady.
Grandma Ethel.
Yeah, who turned me into a dog.
And we Victor and Zero were tentacle monsters.
Yeah.
She's a biology controller.
I was turned into a baby and I think a rat. I thought it would be hilarious if I crawled back into my helmet and started doing it as a rat.
What was funniest for me was, since Victor had taken the super movement slithering, the octopus bottom half did nothing. Absolutely nothing. He could still run at, 64,000 miles an hour with a squid.
Like, you just inked yourself, man. There's a lot of inking in that episode.
Yeah, finding Grandma Ethel was fun because she turned us into random shit.
Yeah, that, and I like Alex's other personal villain, the rumor monger.
Yeah.
He changes reality.
And him, rumor monger plus luscious lawyer equals horrible stuff.
Legal! Sign the salami!
Oh.
Just get the two of them up on a podium talking to a large crowd and things are going to get bad.
What I find funny is that Gwen never actually thought rumor monger. And I was Gozira.
Yeah. Oh yeah, you weren't there.
Yeah, she's like, is this guy?
Yeah,
like a sleazeball.
You come back and you've got like porn.
Yeah. This person's black.
Not me.
Yeah, there the one episode where my maturity rate was very low.
Yeah.
Because you had the two Whitmans, Gozira, and then Alec.
Victor was feeling kind of happy that day.
Yeah, Victor was the...
Adult.
Yeah,
Victor became the adult of the group.
You guys are going to sit here and eat noodles while we're trying to do an ass game. I am out of here.
It helps with the brain.
You were eating noodles with the person we were trying to investigate.
Yeah, so you learn things about how someone eats noodles.
No.
I need a salami.
Yeah. Oh, good, Zira. She's fun to play every now and then. My copy-paste of Godzilla.
Speaking of every now and then games, there's the sci-fi
game. The Pact Space.
Yes.
Did we record those?
Yeah, we record them. They're up in the one-shots.
And we have another one coming up soon, because my birthday's coming soon.
Yeah, right. You know who's coming sooner?
Yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's next week. I don't remember.
I don't know. It's the 5th?
Today, yeah.
Yeah, so it's six days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's swag to play the captain. Like, that plan would have worked if you guys just done the my orders.
It's not my fault this crew of 5 did not invade the pirate ship of several hundred people.
They were drunk.
We could have done it.
They just got out of like cryo. What were they, cryo freed? Yeah.
Cryo frozen.
Cryo frozen.
The first thing they did
was get drunk. Yeah. So I'm like, alright. They won't recognize any of us, so they just think we're part of the crew.
Yeah.
So, like, alright, so we take over the helm. They're all drunk. They're not going to stop us.
But we didn't even get as far as the helm,
no,
as I
recall.
You guys got to the engines, accidentally damaged them, and activated the jump. You guys made it to your ship in time to watch it disappear.
And we have no idea where it is.
Yeah.
The Wayward and Island.
This is Daphne Ashbrook, and you have reached a higher level of Nerdvana.
All right, now this is a story I've actually told a few times. I may have said it on the show. I've said it to a lot of people. But I never actually played D&D until third edition came out. And I was once running a third ed game. I think it was still third ed at the time. But it was I had 13 players at the time.
Good heavens.
Yeah, that sucked a lot. We had to get 2 big tables out for it, and it was literally, you know that scene in Batman where he's sitting at one end and he asks for the salt, and she's like, it was pretty much like that, but with dice.
What'd you roll? Natural 20, I promise.
Use the, you know, the opera glasses. No, that looks like a 4 to me.
Have you ever noticed people's rolling gets better the further away from the GM? Then?
You know, I noticed that. One of the things I had to do in that game was institute a rolling zone on the table. I had to masking tape it off. You have to roll inside this zone.
I got a 3.
Because we had a little issue with some people fudging a lot. As GMs, we can fudge all we want, because we're GMs.
That's legit.
Anyway, we were playing D&D, and these 13 characters, they were going through this dungeon I created. So I essentially did this reverse dungeon. Instead of a dungeon, it was a tower. And they were in sort of the Asian theme, so it was this pagoda. It was a 7th level pagoda. So, of course, they assumed it was a gazebo that had leveled up. Their joke, not mine. Anyway, the creature that lived in this thing was a beholder mage. Oh. And so I decided to, and they were, I want to say, 13th, 14th level at this point. Yeah. So, I mean, this wasn't a, I don't want to get screwed, but.
13 people at.
Essentially, they had been sent there by a doomsphere, because this doomsphere is terrorizing his town, which is a ghost beholder. So they go to this tower and they go through it and they get up to the I think it was the 6th level. The 6th level was the level before the top where the lab was for this beholder mage. And so the beholder mage basically created this very this sort of serpentine way to go through this level. It was all traps. Well, one room, the entire room, walls, ceiling, and floor was made out of acid. And they complained about this, going, well, how does this thing get across this? I'm like, it flies? Because it doesn't have to touch the floor? They get through all of this. They get up to the 7th level. This is possibly one of the funniest times as a GM, as you're sitting there watching these 13 people. Here, one of them is a thief. They sit there and they make their roll. They pick the lock into the laboratory. And I'm looking at the map. You know, the beholder mage is maybe like 10, 15 feet from the door, and they open the door, and then all the players proceed after they pick the lock and start opening the door and have opened the door, they proceed then to argue about strategy, about what they're going to do once they go inside to kill the beholder mage. And so my vision here is this beholder mage who's just doing something, you know, mixing a chocolate shake, whatever. Sitting there, the door creaks open, and he's like, And he just sits there and listens for a sec. He's like, no, we're gonna go in here. You gotta flank it, and we're gonna stab it, and we're gonna do all this. And it's like, okay. So the beholder mage is like, all right, I'll just cast blur on myself. Ha! And it waits. They're still arguing over what they're gonna do. I mean, the barbarian's like, no, I just gotta go in and smash things. The thief's like, I could sneak in and do this. And he's like, you had to watch.
Here's the problem with strategy meetings of 13 people.
Like, okay. Okay, cast Blink on itself. And continues to wait. Meanwhile, the paladin's like, no, no, we have to go face it in honorable combat. The druid's like, you know, I could just turn into a thing, go in there, and oh, I'll do this, da, da, da. Still waiting. Still waiting.
Stone skin.
Thing goes, stone skin. Still waiting. Still waiting. I think, you know, it eventually buffed itself about 5 spells, waiting for them to come in. And so they rush in, and it's a beholder mage, still has some of its eye stalks. And it's like, and the first thing it does is it's preparing all these actions as they're coming through. So it's like, first person through is the barbarian who's just running, and it's like, possessed. Okay, he now attacks the first thing coming through the door, which is, I believe, the cleric at the time.
No.
He starts killing the cleric. The paladin then comes through, who he gets disintegrated.
Oh.
Then I believe the mage came through and got turned to stone. When it's all said and done, about 4 of the player characters, 4 of the characters are dead or otherwise dying. The druid manages to make it up to the actual beholder mage and casts poison on it. And the beholder mage has a constitution of, I want to say after it was all said and done, it had a constitution of about 11 or 12 after various things. Mm-hmm. He did enough constitution damage to it, because with poison, I don't know how it is now, but at poison it was like a D8 or a D10. It was a D10.
Yeah.
Then it had 11 hit. Then it had an 11 constitution because he did 10 constitution damage to it. And then there was the secondary damage like 4 rounds later or a round after that, which was at least going to be 1 con to kill it. So it's like it's gonna die. So. Here he gets in and gets past all its defenses, and I rolled each one separately at the time, and gets through, hits it, poisons one constitution, massive amounts of damage. And so at this point, the paladin is alive because of this psionic gremlin that was in his head, but that's another story. The barbarian, meanwhile, has come out of his whole like I want to kill the cleric thing. The cleric who is almost dead. I was okay, well, we're going to beat this thing. And the beholder mage gets one more action, delayed blast fireballs in the middle of the whole in the middle of the lab.
Of course.
And it's like, well, I'm going to die. Screw you guys.
Yep.
It falls over dead. The delayed blast fireball goes off and sets off all the chemical stuff and kills the barbarian and kills the cleric. I believe the only person that still lived was the rogue at the end of it all.
Well, of course, because they evade.
Evasion, yes.
And he had a statue.
And he had a statue, yes. And managed to drag all of these guys out. And instead of going through the pagoda again, he just threw people off of it, the bodies.
Of course.
To get out.
Why not? I'm not going to do that again.
I will always and forever remember the epic 13-person party that stood and argued outside the open door to the Beholder Mage's lab about how they were going to go in and kill the Beholder Mage. So the Beholder Mage is in there going, okay then. Any time now, guys. It now? No. Okay.
I want to get as many gamer servers as I can, so...
So I was running a game at a con in New Jersey. I was a guest there. It was kind of a pickup game. And they're like, yeah, there are all people who are supposed to make, you know, first level characters. So I told them, all right, go ahead and make your first level character. And I said, you have 10 minutes to make a first level 3.5 edition character. So just crank it as fast as you can. Doesn't matter if there's overlap. And so they did. I'm like, okay. The game starts. All the characters are... just appear in a cavern, and there's a large wizard chanting above them, at which point he's stepped on by a gigantic dragon who ignores him, walks off, and they find out that they're there because he went to the lowest level of a dungeon and practiced his new spell, Summon Heroes. And so it was first level characters at the lowest level of the Underdark having to get their way out.
That's awesome.
And it went about like you expect.
They got slaughtered?
No, actually, the thing is, they were smart. They realized, we can't fight anything here. We have to get past it all. And one of them was smart enough to grab the spell book and start using it to scroll his ripping pages out. But I think because they really, like, with his diary, they thought he used a series of portals. The portals still open technically, so it was like they had a time limit of when to get to each portal before it vanished, and they were just stuck there. And they pretty much got there up until the last portal, and they took too long. And they basically got there in time. One guy put his arm through, and his arm went through the portal, and that was it. So, in his home is this bleeding arm, and he's wandering around the Underdark smelling of blood. And drawing everything out.
Oh dear.
And I didn't even do the last comment. Like, well, that's it, you're done. I also used to run a Buddies and Burrows GURPS game at conventions. I did it for like 4 or 5 years. And the whole point of the game was you're a burrow underneath Miskatonic University when a young Herbert West is doing his early reanimation experiments. Rabbits have been vanishing from your warren. Your job is to find out what happened to them. And it usually ended up horribly.
I bet.
There were two, though, where a rabbit figured out what was going on, but all the other players were killed. But he managed to grab a gun, put in his little bunny pack. He found out where Herbert West was, and he's like, I want to try to shoot West with a gun, because he's seen a gun shot. I was like, well, all right, you have to basically roll a perfect roll for this. You know, all sixes, or no. And he fumbled it. So Herbert West looks over, sees a rabbit holding a revolver. The rabbit puts the revolver under his chin and blows its head off. I was like, well, that'll get him to stop doing the experiments just because. What the fuck just happened? But I also had a guy who was a power gamer, and I told someone, like, no, don't munchkin this, don't power, it's just, you know, I run a very loose GURPS game. And the guy, he was being chased by the groundskeeper with a shotgun, and I do the whole rule of, if you're a rabbit, you jump at a doorknob, you can make a mechanics check or an acrobatics check to kind of turn it and get, fumbles it, so you're just hanging from a doorknob. And so this drunk Scottish groundskeeper puts a shotgun straight to his head and pulls the trigger. And he's like, how much damage do I take? I'm like, you take all of it. I'm not even rolling. And he's like, well, I mean, like, a shotgun's like 3d6. I'm like, in normal groups, you're a bunny. You are very tiny. A howitzer was just put to your head. And he started crying. The player is, I've never lost GURPS. I've never lost. And this little woman sitting across from him smiled. She's like, you did now, and pulled his character sheet and just slowly kind of tore it bit by bit. And it wasn't even like the last story where the guy brought his homebrew. This is a character that was pre-generated. And he had a breakdown.
Oh, man.
And it was one of those one situations where you usually have someone freaks out and everyone's uncomfortable. No, everyone just kept laughing at him. So there's no telling. He's probably a cutter now. That's the magic.
So let me just switch to interview mode for a second. You do something positive. You've been doing something positive for 12 years. By the way, congratulations.
Thank you.
Fantastic comic. I don't remember when I started reading it, honestly. I just know that I went back and read it from the beginning a couple times now. And one of the main things that drew it to me is that your characters keep coming back every so often, and they sit down at the gaming table.
Yeah.
So, I mean, clearly that was something big for you growing up.
Well, my first D&D game, I was 10 or 11. My friend Brandon ran it. His older sister had stopped playing D&D, so we got her first...
It was first edition. Oh, I was about to ask you which edition it was.
Yeah. Second edition hadn't come out quite yet, or was about to come out. But he inherited these from his sister, and he didn't know how to fucking run a game. You know, we're kids.
Oh.
So I wanted to play a halfling because I love The Hobbit. It's one of my favorite books. So he was like, well, you can be a rogue because I'm halfling. You know, what you gonna do? He assigned me my weapon, which is a quarterstaff. So I wrote down stick. And so I'm walking through the woods, and he does a random encounter. It was a great worm red dragon. I'm like, I don't think this is right. So what do you do? I'm like, I run. You can't. The path behind you is going impassable. I'm like, fuck you. Ahead. I club myself with my stick till I go unconscious. He's like, you gotta do combat. I'm like, so I tag. He's like, oh, you guess you can't hurt it. And of course, it killed me. Well, he's like, I think I did this wrong. I was like, no, we're done. I'm not playing. I didn't play D&D again for years. What I did play was Cyberpunk.
Shadowrun?
Shadowrun, I didn't play the high school.
Okay.
Cyberpunk?
Oh, the original Cyberpunk games.
Yeah, the actual one from our Talisorian.
Have you seen that they're doing the new computer game for Cyberpunk?
Whatever. Okay. It's not a system I care about much about anymore. I like the idea, the genre, but not the game as much. But I'll give it a try. We played that. We played Star Frontiers, which are TSR. It was basically their space opera game, which is really fun, except the actual virtual book had no rules for space travel or spaceships. They had to do a second expansion for that. It was TSR. It was TSR.
Okay.
And what is it? I can't remember the name now. Gamma World. That was the one.
Gamma World.
That was, I loved Gamma World. We played that, and we played Car Wars all the time. The Car Wars games always just devolved to our characters getting out of the cars and attacking each other, because our cars would be nothing left. And it was just like, oh, it's just us. Grab some what's left of the car and attack each other with it. So those were my early games, and I played all through high school. Anytime there was a 3-day or 4-day weekend, our gaming group was going to meet at someone's house and play a game. Yeah. And it's just how we did it. And in college, when you came home, you found out where everyone was at, and you played D&D. And I ran Earthdawn in college. We played Birthright campaigns, which I love. Overlooked.
One of my co-hosts, Jeremy, is a loved Birthright.
Birthright is one of my favorite systems. I have the best memories of that. The first system I ever, setting ever I ever ran was Al-Qadim. I loved Al-Qadim. I also ran Toon. In fact, I've never played Toon, but I've run it for 20-something years.
Yeah. That's another series. It's funny, because Gamers Haven got me into... Gamers Haven is what got me past D&D.
Yeah.
I mean, listening to the Gamers Haven podcast is what got me into it. I've told the story a number of times. And it's just... It's interesting, because they opened my eyes, and I started looking up all these different systems to see what else was out there.
Yeah. There's a lot of good, there's a lot of shit, too.
There is. Have you had a chance to play one of our favorite systems? Have you played Savage Worlds?
I wasn't into it. I looked through it, and I think I have an unfair bias against it, because they took over Deadlands.
Well,
and I love the original Deadlands system.
Yeah.
I love the card character creation. The card magic system.
They've actually the card magic system is still there,
okay.
And people have actually published, and it's on the Deadlands web or on the Pinnacle website. They have the card creation character rules for Savage Worlds, and that's what I've used for all of my games. I use the card system.
When I first looked at it, they didn't have that.
Yeah,
and they've
updated the rules. They're on their like third edition of the rules now.
Pinnacle also had a giant split, you know, and one group went one way, and so this is back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And it's just one of those things. It was a great system that they never seemed to know what to do with. It's not like FOSSA when they had Earthdawn. They didn't know what to do with it. And Earthdawn was amazing.
They've been doing some pretty cool... I have to say, they've been doing some pretty cool stuff with it recently.
With Earthdawn? Deadlands.
The new Earthdawn is not...
There's been multiple... The thing is, at one point, Deadlands, the license is owned by two different companies.
Really?
And one was just basically rehashing the other stuff.
Yeah.
And the other one, the company's like, no, we're actually building off of it and doing
it.
I mean, but they still release the old stuff, too. And I had some readers who did that, and they actually brought me a bunch of the books. I ran that throughout 2 years of college. I loved Earthdawn. I wish for a Shadowrun they'd bring the Earthdawn races into it, too. Because they're connected, but... There's a lot of stuff. The nice thing about gaming, if you have a good group, even a kind of shit system can be decent.
Well, I mean, has your group ever been, or has your group been more about the story, or have they been more about
depends
the rules?
On who I played with. I mean, when I lived in Boston, most of my last years in Boston, most of my people I played with were actors, improv actors. So I ran a Mutants and Mastermind game with, you know, 3 and 4 improv actors.
I bet that worked really
it was
well.
Golden age during World War II. And like the most competent hero was the female hero played my friend Christina, and everyone in out of character admitted, yeah, she's the most competent hero, but in character, like, that's a woman. And they kept it going that way. And it was fun because they would take it very seriously. I generally try to go for the story. I won't make you do a role of like, your character wouldn't know how to do it, unless it's like, well, this is a tense situation. I'd rather be either funny or a good story goes where it needs to go. In fact, I have had players basically sacrifice their characters. You could go around, yeah, but it made sense.
Yeah.
This is the way it should be.
I will invite you to, I know you have a long drive home.
Yeah.
Check out, if you want something to listen to, check out Gamers Haven, check out our actual play recordings, because we have all these recordings of people's games, and we have some of the coolest games. we have a game that my friend Andre runs that is, it's an all wizards game. Everybody had to start as one class, but had to take at least one level of wizard or... had to take a level of wizard, and it's progressed. The game has gone for about 4 years now. Yeah. I'm now in that game. I got to join that game when I moved here. But they did season one, which was the first 4 years of them getting their asses kicked in college.
Oh, yeah.
In this nasty, nasty wizards college. And now they own their own college, and it's the stuff that's happening now.
I always enjoy games where you need to actually move beyond, like, no, I'm actually a landowner, I'm a lord. That's why I liked, actually, Birthright, because you could be a regent. In fact, I remember being a regent of, like, I was a shadow halfling, and I was over, like, theme guild stuff, but I actually managed to buy an island from one of the I think it's the Lamassu or something like that, and she had an island, and I actually bought it from her and opened a casino for other regents.
Nice.
It was great. But...
I get to the point where money just doesn't mean anything.
No, money meant a lot. It meant power.
Well,
and in that game, you have to have money to be able to do most of the stuff you want to do. So having it meant I actually have more power than the law-giving regent, because I can outdo anything because I can throw money at it. And there's literally nothing he can do. Oh, you have me executed? I can throw enough money at it that your men turn on you. I also ran a Bunnies and Burrows game for some readers for a few years. And that was fun, because it's all readers who work in phone sex, because I do phone sex storylines in my comic. So I got a lot of storylines out of them, but it's just also little maniacal bunnies. You have one who's an alcoholic with a vengeful streak.
It's funny, GURPS is one of those things I have not had a chance to sit down and read the rules for. I understand it's quite versatile and quite... Yeah.
Well, that's the whole point. And the nice thing about Steve Jackson is a very smart man. GURPS, pretty sure every edition has done GURPS Lite, so you want to look at it, you can download the rules for free and play with them. It's, you know, a very stripped-down basic rules, but it's like, okay, do you like this? Okay, cool, then go to the book and look at the more advanced rules. Steve is very smart in what he does, and he was one of the first people to do things like that.
Yeah.
What time is it, by the way? Oh, 11:32. It has been a quiet day.
How's the con going for you today?
Oh, today is awful.
It's Sunday.
Yeah, but this is the day where I need to make the money anyway. Yeah. I broke even yesterday, but it's like, I can break even staying at home. And spend no money to do it. Yeah. It's a callous thing to say, but it's true.
No, unfortunately, I'm sure that's the sad reality of webcomics and coming to cons.
But it's the reality of any genre coming to convention. And you'll have people get angry, like, you should be doing this because you love it. Yeah, I do it. That's why I make it my job. And you'll have people who don't understand that, you know, when it becomes your job, you sacrifice a lot and you take a lot of risks, and you can't afford 3 or 4 bad conventions in a year.
Yeah.
You know, I've had a couple conventions last year where I took $1,200 loss. I can't take... That's a month of rent and bills.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money to take. And so it makes you a little more hesitant and a little more careful. And so, you know, when people like tell you, well, at least you broke even... I could have stayed home, worked on my comic, done an art sale, and pure profit. And it's awful, because it's one thing if the con sucks, and, you know, the people run the con are shitty, and then you don't feel bad about it. But I've had cons, the ones that make me the most upset are the ones where, oh, everyone is really nice. It's just, it's a situation where people have the money, whatever, and, like, you can't come back. You can't justify it. Even though you met sweet attendees who were wonderful people, the con staff loved you, but you're like, but I didn't make any money. I lost money. So I can't come back. I'm sorry. And it's... Because also, if people like you enough, they'll start doing... They'll try to do the whole, like, well, why don't you try me? No, I can't, you know? The haggling. And it's like, no, you don't understand. Even if you gave me a free table, it cost me to get here to bring my merch. And... Time away from home, time away from, you know, work, time for my family. That's a lot to give. It's one of the things I never considered when I started doing this, that it does make conventions sometimes really wear on you because you get homesick. Like last year, I did a month where I was not home. I did three conventions back to back to back. And I drove to all of them. So I went to Anaheim, to Kansas City, Kansas, to Seattle, to back to Dallas. And I just wanted to be home so bad at the end of it. Like, even though
especially Emerald City, everyone was so sweet, but like, I just want to go home. I just really want to go home now.
I vaguely remember you writing something about that in the comments.
It was like the closest I've ever had to having a breakdown on the road. I was just so tired and miserable. And it wasn't because of anyone. Every attendee I met was sweet, except at WonderCon, there were a bunch of scumbags. But they weren't my readers, so I don't care. All my readers there were nice. It was just the random attendees can go to hell. Lots of kids here.
It's not that
much. Yeah, sure.
Which is surprising, and a lot of kids in costume, but the kids' costume was yesterday, so.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway, so thank you.
Filth-filled back streets of merry old London, the scream rings out in the night, echoing against the harsh brick walls. Another horror of the night has nearly claimed a victim, feeding upon the weak and defenseless. But before the meal is to be had, a shot rings out, a report against those who would prey upon the downtrodden. The Rippers have arrived to take back the night, and the night will not go down without a fight. A game centered around the action-packed Savage World setting, Rippers. Join Rippers and show the beasts of the night that humanity will not disappear into the darkness without a fight.
Now, you've heard us talk about a guy on the podcast named Sanjian Unkara. Now, this guy is actually a guy up in, one of our listeners up in the Vancouver area, up in Canada. He's actually, him and his lovely wife come down for CantCon. Came down for last year, coming down again this year. He sent us an email, or he sent us a message sort of late in all of this, and I'm going to read what he had to say. He said, "Greetings and salutations. Congratulations on 100 episodes. I think I've probably sent you enough of my favorite moments from your games, so I thought I would send you a few from my own. I have to write out this first one because I can't find the recording that we have of it. I have to preface this by telling you about one of our players. His name is Mark, and he is one of the nicest people you could ever hope to meet. He really is the give-you-the-shirt-off-his-back type of guy. He's the type of guy that brings treats in for the staff at the store when we play and shares with the rest of us. He's also quite polite. He puts the rest of us Canadians to shame. I'm talking traditional Japanese polite. He even wrote a real honest-to-God thank-you card for the chocolate that Jess's mother gave out at Christmas time to all the players. That's why I was such a surprise to everyone when, in the first session of my last campaign, when Jess's character couldn't speak any language but her own, he acted as a translator for her and tried to sell her in the market square. Everyone's jaws were on the table. Then, when they remembered how to breathe again, there was much yelling and laughing, and one of our other girls asked if we should add Smurf Disturber to the character sheet. I've sent you a file with two clips as well. The first one is Mark in my first GM experiment with combining encounters and amethyst. We spent a lot of time trying to get Mark to crack, and this was as close as we've gotten. The second clip was suggested by one of my players, and your show was one of the favorite moments of my first Alpha, and was one of his favorite moments in my first Alpha Omega game involving Jess and her mother. Jess is a 7-foot-tall angelic gladiator, and her mother was a 3-foot-tall scout medic. Seems I can't run a straight game to save my life. Sanjian." So enjoy these clips Sanjian sent in.
Dungeons & Dragons Thunder Rift.
We're all connected with rope and each other, so we could, because we could, once we hold something, we can feel it down, but if there's an object in the portal, we can't touch it, I'm presuming. Okay, so we're like kind of connected together, right? Because if you touch something outside the portal, it's real, but as soon as you go into the portal, and you can't touch anything in the portal. So what's existing in this world, we could go down, right? But what is in that world, it doesn't exist. That's when I went down. That's why I was going down the rope. I could feel
the portal jibbles.
I'm going to do an insight check to see if I can figure out what Mark is talking about.
No. I'm just wondering the logic, though.
I don't know. Do you pass?
No, I got a one.
No, I'm just wondering the logic, though. No, because I could feel the rope, right?
Yep.
And what we brought down, we could feel that, right?
Yeah.
But what's in there, we can't feel. Like, I couldn't feel her, right? I could go down the rope.
Are you touching her?
I was trying to, because I went right down to the rope to the end. I can feel no, not it,
it's okay, Mark. Relax.
This is I'm a decent man.
Yes, we know you are.
I don't touch women
no,
that way.
Funny.
Women, I don't. No, I don't touch that way.
That's
only
funny.
Women. No, you know, like, you know,
keep digging the hole, Mark.
No, no, only relationship-wise, I touch women that way. She's my girlfriend. I do that, but
it's okay, Mark. We get it.
I know.
Do you need a bigger shovel?
No, 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 it's true. So, no, I'm a gentleman.
Do you need a bigger shovel?
My character is Lawful Good Soldier. He's a gentleman.
Yes, he takes after you.
Gentleman soldier. So.
I throw her in.
Yeah, I'm so tiny.
You're taking too long.
Gee, I don't know. Roll that.
Oops, I missed. Which part was it? The wall or the window? Or worse yet, was it the broken glass section of the wall? Right out the window.
Just look of absolute glee on her face as she starts picking up the dice.
Eugene.
Why does it sound like we have a flat?
the 21.
To do what? Pick her up or throw her?
You're caught around the axle. Okay, sword goes away.
The thrower. Loaded.
Who's loaded? She seems
no.
to be.
No, no.
Loading is the gun. 21 to thrower.
Okay.
Picking her up is nothing.
Yeah, but getting a hold of her might be hard.
She's right behind me. It's not hard.
Yes, but is she going to dodge out of the way as you try and grab her?
She's not going to see me coming.
She's right behind you. How could she miss you?
The wings. It's got to be the wings.
Suddenly she gets buffeted by feathers. So you're throwing an 18 to hit the truck. 21 to hit the truck, okay. That will actually... That would hit the door. It'd be great if it was open yet.
Oh, you see what it says? Boom.
And considered its armor plating, there's no windows on that door.
No, no.
He backed in.
No.
She would have hit the rear end of the door. She would have hit that tailgate. Isn't...
And then the plate drops.
Wang!
That's okay, I'll only take 8 damage.
Till
the plate drops.
Well, as Stan smashed into the lobby, glass spraying across the room.
And the 800-pound guy stomps on it. And the 12 or 1300-pound guy stomps on it.
The sun would shine on it for a while, and then all of the carts would just, like, sink
eventually
into the
tarnish.
Road.
Eventually they'd tarnish. Yeah, eventually they'd tarnish.
Somebody better clean that shit up, because if Gort comes back and they're not clean, he's going to be pissed.
Well, I'm just thinking about how soft they would get. You'd
not
get
his
the
problem.
Caravan.
He'll give somebody a statue
there
to fix it.
Potholes are horrible.
This is the road ever.
So is the Golden Road, yes.
Just don't tell him that his road is horrible.
They tried to change it in a few locations, and then some dwarf showed up.
Berg break his kneecaps. He's a bad guy.
Yeah. When you think of Berg, Andrew's character, think of he was a dwarf berserker from Warhammer with the mohawk and everything.
The Slayers.
The Slayers,
yeah,
yes.
He's a Slayer.
So in the universe, he started, basically, eventually had dwarven children following him around.
They shaved their heads.
And they shaved their heads and gave themselves mohawks because they wanted to be like Berg. And so they eventually had his shorties.
They were his shorties.
They'd follow him around. It was hilarious. Him and his
we traveled everywhere on a fishing boat.
Uh-huh.
That's how we appeared in the campaign, on a fishing boat
in the
desert.
Yeah. I still think you guys were convinced you were still in Ravenloft.
We never said we weren't in Ravenloft. That's why when your gods would talk, we'd be like, You're not our god. We're still in Ravenloft.
Yeah, that was the campaign with the god war, and the god of the moon was killed by the god of slaughter, which
clerics,
made werewolves and
lycanthropes
very amusing.
Or sun-tombing the giant spider.
Yes, that was one where Robin's character Sunfire-tombed the giant vampiric spider who was named Winston.
I liked Winston.
He was very nice, but then Gorik decided that he needed to chat about taking him out in front of his little children. Early.
Well, there's just too many
Winston
spiders.
Was really a she.
Well, Winston was
babies.
I don't know. One of my favorite moments from Legend of Gamer's Haven still will always be from the game where you were playing Saxon, where you used, for some reason this is still one of the most ingenious things. You used summon water, and then the next round you animated it on top of the goblin where you had splashed the water and just like choked him to death. It's just like.
I was personally rather proud of the bag of tricks.
Oh God! Were you just
feeding the?
There you go.
What was it? Those trolls are ogres. I think they're ogres.
Bag of tricks.
And I was like, all right, we need to leave quickly because those things only are around for about an hour. So in about an hour,
squirrel,
they're going to get really
squirrel,
hungry.
Squirrel.
The thing is, we figured actually they would starve to death.
Yeah.
Because they just keep eating and keep eating. It's like, oh, I'm hungry. Eat more and eat more, and they eventually would just die. So I killed a whole tribe of ogres.
Oh no, they were the Minotaurs.
Oh, Minotaurs,
the Minotaur
right.
tribe. Well, the Minotaur tribe actually adopted you guys. They gave you hats.
Yes.
And the hats didn't come off.
No.
And so you guys were like Minotaurs for a little while. You guys didn't like that.
No.
Yeah. And so you ended up giving them the bag of holding. So basically, they thought that was the awesomest thing ever.
Constant it was the
food,
bag of tricks.
Or bag of tricks. Yeah. So yeah, constant food to small animals. They'd come out. Yeah.
For some reason, then they were always hungry. Yeah, I was surprised there was still a druid after that.
Well, you can't really lose your powers like that.
Food chain, just...
And that was my logic behind it. You know, it's like, they're not really dying, per se.
The same four animals just keep getting, oh god.
Kill me!
But eventually that whole tribe would just die of starvation. Because they would just eat more of that and they would just die.
What was...
It's been 2 years since graduation, and it's time for a new adventure. The Gamers Haven podcast proudly presents the exciting sequel to the original Wizards College campaign, Pathfinder Wizards College. Class is back in session.
Okay, so we're playing in Mystara, and we're raiding...
This is 2.5 D&D.
2.5. AD&D. I'm playing one of my favorite characters, Gavin Drake. He's a thief
Magic
fighter.
User.
Magic geezer, whatever. Anyway.
He's great.
We're running through, we're dodging, whatever. So we're playing with our good friend, Good Mike, as we call him. And he's a funny-ass GM, but he's really good. So we're opening doors.
Very vulgar, we might add.
Very vulgar.
Very
but
vulgar.
Funny as hell. We open this door.
As you're sneaking through the castle.
His face is hilarious. He's little glasses and... And he just
big
goes,
grin with a cigarette hanging out of the corner of his mouth.
You open the door, and he's always smoking. The cigarette in his mouth. He's you open the door, and there's this guard, and he's balls deep in his woman.
He stops and looks at the open door, and we're just like,
and, look, and we're just like, we shut the door and move on. We're not gonna kill him. Come on.
He's getting busy. We're like, and we're done with that one. Next room.
You don't kill some guy and some girl when they're doing their thing.
Oh, what makes it worse was we make it up to the top level and we surprise the wizard and get off several good attacks.
And he just looks at us and goes, delayed blast fireball.
And then
delayed
blast fireball. And then walks out of the room.
And then leaves.
And we're like, stuck in this room because he holds
the portal.
And all
these guards come up. We're like, shit.
So what we ended up doing was I ended up going out the window head first, holding the rope while someone else was holding it so I wouldn't fall to my death.
Meanwhile, my brother's playing a dwarf. He's down at the road, and he has crossbows. And he's just like... just killing everything.
All the guards, because he set up a diversion.
Because we had a flying elf who was my character's partner,
And so I just jump off the tower going, oh God, I hope she can carry me. The tower's exploding.
Meanwhile, by this point, after they've held the rope so I don't die, I've jumped the last remaining 30 feet down, taking massive amounts of damage, and I'm limping my way away as they come out the thing. The whole top of the tower was gone. Gone. They took out the entire top of the tower. There was like 60 guards in there, too. He wiped out all the guards. He didn't give a crap. He's like, oh, fuck it, I can replace them. Just swat, all dead. Just to kill us because he was irritated with us because we broke in and attacked him.
He was the mage that we snuck back in and tried to enchant his bedroom so that our so that from our castle, because this got all ridiculous later on, that basically where we had our
garbage
our
pit.
Garbage pit and our crap pit, it would shit on his bed. Yeah. Now we never actually got that done, but that was our goal.
Because unfortunately he moved before we got to that.
So, but it was a fun game.
Mike was a great guy. I wish I could get a hold of him because I would like him to come down to CantCon. I mean, granted, he probably shouldn't run anything.
No, he should. That was the best. And we also played
Star Wars.
We played Star Wars,
and
awesome
he
Star
had,
Wars game.
He had the most perfect timing for the music. It'd be like in the middle of doing something, and you know, the music would be intense, you know, for a fight. And we get done with the fight. He'd go into this, like, this soliloquy of a character, you know, doing character exposition, and it would kick in with, like, something just sweeping, just like, damn.
And also,
why can't I have timing like that?
You always knew if you earned a dark side point that you earned a dark side point.
Yeah.
Because you would start to argue, and he'd just look at you and be like, well, crap. And also, the vampire mage, and werewolf, those were actually good under him. Too.
As he said, if you have to justify what you're doing,
then you get a dark side.
You get a dark side point.
Yeah, Jedi it's do like, not need to justify.
Yeah, if you have to justify what you did as a Jedi, you've earned a dark side point because Jedis should not have to justify what they did. And it makes
Jedi
sense.
Justify.
That's a fair enough. That's a fair point.
Yeah, it makes sense because it really did. It kept you on the straight and narrow as a Jedi. It worked really great. And yeah, his werewolf game was awesome.
Yeah, we played werewolf, mage, and vampire, and they were all fun.
Except for that one session.
I don't remember what. Okay, there was that session.
That one session.
That was a little loud.
Where all of us freaked out because we're all like, holy crap, one woman in this room.
Oh, okay, so we're all, was that vampire or was that?
That was werewolf. She was playing my sister. It was a World of Darkness game.
I thought it was vampire.
Ezra was playing a vampire. I was playing a werewolf. Josh's girlfriend was playing a werewolf. She was playing my sister.
All I know is we played at a
hotel.
Where Mike, he was the manager.
Yeah, so he was always on site.
And okay, so here's the scene. Bunch of gamer guys, blind chick. Blind chick, she's the girlfriend of one of the guys.
Yeah.
And so her character gets attacked.
By a vampire.
And so what does she do? She screams rape.
In a hotel.
She screams rape.
At the top of her lungs.
So scene, full of guys, one woman.
Five.
Well, not even a woman. Girl.
Teenager.
Teenage girl. Motel room, and we all go deadly quiet, and we're just like,
was she blind or deaf?
Oh, she was blind.
She was blind.
And we all just stop and go,
oh my God,
don't. And she's just like, why does everybody stop talking? And we had to explain it. And
because
she's like,
we're jumping out the window.
Yeah, we're like, what?
We're like vacating
we're heading
the room
toward the
at
window,
this point.
And some of us are heading towards the door. And we explained, and she's like,
she's like, I didn't think about that.
I didn't think about that. And we're like,
nothing happened.
Oh, God.
But, oh, my God. We were terrified.
We thought we were going to be murdered by, you know...
by a hotel full of people. Yeah. It was scary.
That's actually, that's actually really scary.
Because I just look at this situation, I can see you guys sitting in the police car trying to explain. No, you don't understand. It was just a game.
It was just a game? It's like the vampire was just attacking her, and the werewolves weren't there yet.
Oh my God. We're burning in hell.
Yeah, and then I see your mother getting that phone call, and
I can see my dad getting that phone call. He did what? Let him sit in jail for a while. Fuck him.
I don't see
I don't see this turning out well.
No.
We
had to have a long conversation about volume of voice. Because it was a shriek that echoed
through the entire top floor. Oh my god. The entire top floor. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have never been so close to feeling like I was going to piss my pants.
I don't remember who it was, but somebody almost went out the window.
That was Josh. Josh is like, oh, yeah. I almost went out the window. He says, I was so terrified. I would have rather broken my neck falling 30 feet to the ground. We're on the third floor. We were at the top. We were in the executive, basically it was a room that they rented out not only as a room but as a room to do meeting rooms.
Meeting room.
And yeah, we were 30 feet up and Josh was like, I'm going out the window. Bye guys.
That was not. That was kind of
I have never been so terrified in my life.
That's right.
And I have faced some scary stuff in my life, and that takes the case.
But the cops never showed up, so
no.
that's
that was good.
No.
Actually, that's kind of bad if you think about it.
That's true, yeah.
You know for a fact.
Well, that was in North Lawrence, though, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay, that makes sense.
Explains
that explains
it.
That's kind of sad.
Because the people just sort of went,
it's okay, she's probably fine. No! I would have been like, oh my god, they're killing somebody up. Wait, they're... No, that's horrible. Please.
I don't hear anything. That's worse!
There's vampires?
Next thing you know, guys with shotguns.
I know.
Yeah.
And then the police.
Yeah. It was terrifying. It was. Scariest thing ever.
Only available for download on GamersHavenPodcast.com.
It is 2007, and just a few years after the Marotak invasion. L.A. was destroyed, turned to rubble. However, like an angel, the city rose once more, becoming the City of Angels. The streets have become packed with gang war and supervillain-on-supervillain violence following the murder of the previous superhero group, the Rebels. Will the new kids on the block, the Guardian Angels, be able to reclaim the streets, or will they die trying? Mutants and Masterminds, City of Angels.
Okay, so usually most of my groups are fairly shady, you know, kind of backstabby, not necessarily the best cooperative teams. And I think it might be from this event that they developed it, because they were playing a party of all good characters. We had a paladin, a battle priest, a lawful good monk, another cleric of who had like the vow of poverty and all that. They were all like these pure icons of good. And in order to get into a dungeon, it said a blood sacrifice must be made. And so they sat there going, oh no. It was this big stone sarcophagi with these rusty nails. And of course, you obviously close and it stabs them and will bleed them dry. They're like, okay, well, we need to figure out who's going to do this. Well, I was like, normally they just steal a peasant or something and toss it in there. They're like, well, we can't do that. Well, or they could summon monster. No, that'd be cruel to the monster. Okay. So at this point, they're like, okay, well, we need to decide one of us has to do it. So for 2 hours, they sit there and argue using process of elimination. You can't sacrifice yourself because you're the prince. Okay, well, fine. You can't sacrifice yourself because you're the paladin. We need to have the paladin around. Well, we don't want to sacrifice either of the clerics because they can heal us. So in the end, they finally decide after 2 hours to sacrifice the barbarian. They're level 11.
Like,
hey. The barbarian volunteered.
He doesn't have any diplomas.
He was regretting not putting anything in diplomacy or bluff.
At this point, he had like a DR3 dash because this was 3.5.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, they're like, well, we'll resurrect you. We salute you. You know, we will always remember your sacrifice. He's like, okay, well, I love you, brothers. I'll meet you on the other side. And they seal the lid. They clasp it down. They go, ah! And I go, all right, you take 14 points of damage. Which is reduced because you have DR. They're like, so after DR, how much do I take? About 3. What? I told you, they sacrificed peasants.
That's one of those situations as a GM, you're just sitting back and going,
You know, I could say something, but I'm just going to let this go for 2 hours. So this is funny.
After that moment, they were more than happy to sacrifice each other back short-sell like, each other.
That's it? That's all that happened?
But for 2 hours, I had this pure holy group arguing who would take 14 points of damage at level 12.
Me? Oh, I play games.
Oh, I like games.
Whoa, no, I mean tabletop game, you know, with dice and stuff, you know, like D&D.
Measure!
Was it something I said?
Sir, I think you should leave.
Psst. Hey, buddy, don't worry. You'll find a Gamer's Haven around the corner.
The Gamer's Haven Podcast. At GamersHavenPodcast.com.
Okay, so apparently people need to learn that just because you quit the game doesn't mean that my plot's done. Because if you quit, the bad guys still win. This has two specific examples, one of which was an area which people who've listened to New Hope know as Tharzadon. This god-awful, horrible, blighted place. I had a story that was probably when I was like 15 or 16 years old where they had to stop an evil demon from being summoned into the world. The players, after about session 8, were bored. And so they decided to quit. I was like, okay, well, they win. So their entire homeland, everything they had worked for, was destroyed and utterly annihilated. And their characters are, of course, branded into the side of a hill, forever watching as their home is destroyed continually, over and over and over.
Well, it is a living world, so you know.
It's a persistent world, and they went, that, you mean... The game just didn't stop? Nope!
It's a living world.
Wait, and you guys call Ethan the carpetbagger?
I'm the only...
And I'm the only one that has actually received an email that says, you're a sadistic GM.
No, I think
Ethan,
actually...
they bring it on themselves.
Honestly,
that's what I said! It was for Deadlands! Deadlands! It was not called Care Bear World or Happy Fun Town!
Ethan, we've already established.
It was Care Bears Reloaded. But
if you listen to Care Bears Reloaded.
No. Deadlands was much more tame.
Yep.
The other setting was. A few of you have heard about in my setting the Cataclysm, which is referred to occasionally throughout the game as the world ending or something like that. Well, that was another group who decided to push me as far as I could go to see how much I was going to tolerate them being sassy, intolerant, and, well, just generally screwing with the setting. So I was like, okay, well, the gods smite the planet. Oh, okay, well, that's kind of funny. No, the gods smite the planet. You guys are killed instantly. The party blows themselves up. And in general, the entire continent is destroyed.
Well, technically, one player blew up the continent.
Yes, there was one player who's playing a gnomish inventor. And he was attempting to intimidate the frost giant Jarl King, who's a blackguard and immune to fear. And he was trying to intimidate him, saying, I will blow you up if you do not obey me. And of course, the frost giant, looking at this gnome, went, right! And so the frost giant wasn't stopping. So he created a small explosion. Neat. Okay, I'm still a frost giant. Well, the player decided to continue until he basically dropped an atomic bomb and destroyed the entire group. And part of the continent. Then the frost giant learned the point, but the player still blames me for that situation. At which point I go, you do realize he was immune to fear, right? And therefore immune to intimidation?
TPK
by the player's choice, and he still blames me.
Well, technically, a couple survived.
A couple survived by hiding inside a portable hole.
Yes.
They had air for a little while.
No, what they decided to do was they managed to take one of the casters, so they plane shifted out. So they started plane shifting. Smart. Smart.
So here's what I want to know. Who first determined that putting a portable hole inside a bag of holding was a bad idea? I want to know if any of our listeners know the origin of this story, because it has been established in canon that it basically creates a black hole and ends the universe.
Two extra dimensional spaces cannot.
I understand that. I
cannot join together.
But here's the question. Who determined?
It's just a known
fact. He's saying, how do mages know that when doing that will end the world, including yourself?
Well, it may not end the world.
No.
The surrounding area. It depends. Now, if you were to take massive quantities of them,
and then you have to set up,
you can create an anti-matter bomb. But if you do it the other way around, I don't know. There's a mixture, because there's one.
Yeah, if you put the other way around, if you put the, what is it?
It's a really easy way of creating a portal to another plane.
Yep, problem is you don't know what plane it's going to be.
No, who cares? That's part of the fun.
You know what? Honestly, Ethan, I vote this is what we do next time we do Wizards College. Because you know what? The planes are effed up enough as it is. So let's just...
Ironically, it fixes everything.
Are we still recording?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Smurfed up, sorry.
I don't care. This is his thing. I don't have to edit this one.
Neither do I.
Going to Aaron. No, but we'll just drop a portable hole inside one of my bag into either like my handy haversack or the bag of holding, and we'll see what happens.
Because
you know what? At this point, with all the stuff that's going on in that game,
you could just teleport 10 feet away.
Or you could summon the thing that's been eating the planes. You could all get eaten. That'd be a really funny way to end that game. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Climb into the portable hole, then open the bag of holding.
The problem is a lot of the astral planes can eat right now, and the other planes.
Okay.
Geth Yankee, you're dumb.
It's like how I wiped out the drow.
What?
The drow
turned them into dorks.
I turned them into dark orcs, so they are dorks.
Unfortunately, Ethan, I can't kill off the dark elves, otherwise my girlfriend breaks up with me.
Stop, wait.
This is not my problem.
What did you do to the dark elves?
At the end of the second campaign that we did, I think it was the second campaign that I did, the whole point of the campaign was it was a god war, and the Grumsh ended up on the side of the good guys, and he ended up killing Lolf and took over the drow. And so
he wasn't that
Grumsh
bad.
Being Grumsh, going, elves are stupid and gay, turn them into dark orcs.
You gotta
which
realize
were very stupid, strong, and had a horn.
You gotta
and
keep,
he called them dorks.
You gotta keep in mind, in that game, the elves
were Nazis. And then he hired them,
and he starts
hiring them out as an army.
Elves equaled Nazis. So we were okay with orcs, unless they attacked us.
That's a pretty good one.
Nope. So the regular orcs ended up basically joining civilized society because of the way the god war ended up. They're essentially like used car salesmen in that they have control over this basically this giant army for hire of dark orcs that know nothing but lifting things and killing things because they're really really dumb. And so they hire them out often to both sides of a conflict.
It's a great way to finish any conflict. Think about it. So none of my soldiers have to die.
Think of the orcs I was basically developing. They're essentially like the Ferengi.
Awesome.
Nice.
Yes. This is also the world where his character broke some of the economy.
Some of it.
Broke the economy.
Okay. There are roads of gold.
We determined that yes, later on, whenever we get back to that setting, that there are... He created so much gold that gold became almost worthless. There was so much of it. And so eventually some countries just decided to start using it as paving stones. And so they made these roads that were literally golden coins that had been used as paving.
Well, Gorik's idea of helping people was showing up in a village at that point and giving them a statue of himself and possibly Freydis and Berg.
Which was Robin's character, and that was Andrew's character.
And the statue was of gold.
Yes.
Now, the village is probably starving to death, but that's not his business. Uh-huh. He just gave you money. What's wrong with the money?
This is
why
the campaign
taking the money.
This was all prologue or epilogue stuff for characters because this campaign ended when they were 25th level. And
it was awesome.
There, we determined that, that he broke several economies because he had this. He kept creating all this gold. And we also determined that after some countries did this, his character came back and cursed those roads, so people can't take the money off of it. Because he's a dick.
He had a twisted type of greed, because every time we got treasure, Gorik had to have it. But the thing was, he was willing to give it out once he had it. It had to go on his sheet, and then he would be like, you get this, you get this, you get this, you're a dick, you don't get this, I get this. And then at the end, he had everything he wanted.
This is the same campaign where we had the wizard cast Shocking Grasp inside a cast iron submarine.
We had the...
Because there was a shark attacking the sub, and he's like, oh, this will get it.
We had our barbarian Berg, who was
who had more than a at 20. He was like straight 25 levels as barbarian.
Oh god,
he had over so 1,000 hit points. He was really ridiculous.
He was unstoppable. I mean, at 3.5
like,
or 3.
Take 240 points of damage. Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty then.
I grabbed the dragon by its testicles and feed it to it.
I don't understand this was at epic level. Basically, once they hit epic level, I stopped using hit points for my bad guys. Because I'm like, well, one, I had one, you know, James's character, the wizard, Shocking Grasp inside the submarine, was also prone on, well, I'm going to hit it with magic missile until it dies. I'm like, that's dumb. So, these hit points, out the window. Right.
Why is there no one to talk gaming with around here?
What you need, my friend, is the Gamer's Haven.
Gamer's Haven? What's that?
The Gamer's Haven is a podcast that talks about all sorts of tabletop games, RPGs, card games, board games, and more. And if you have a need of a fix of role-playing, listen to one of their many actual play podcasts. They have ones for Deadlands, Dungeons & Dragons 4E, Pathfinder, and more. Just go to www.gamershavenpodcast.com to find them.
Wow! Are you some sort of sage?
No, I am just a guy from New Jersey doing a really bad accent. Go to the Gamer's Haven now!
You want me to introduce myself? How does this work?
Go right ahead.
Well, my name is Sarah. You guys may know me as Noah's woman.
I'm getting an image now of Animal from the Muppet.
Woman! Woman! Woman!
I believe it was you guys who first used that quote, you know, yes, referring to me in one of your podcasts.
Yes, and we instructed our listeners to, of course, Google woman.
What a woman was.
Yes.
Yes.
Google woman!
But with your safe search on.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah.
Or don't.
That wasn't sexist at all.
Yeah. No, not at all.
Okay.
But you know what? It's our show, so.
Okay.
Once we reach 100 episodes, we can do what we want.
That's right.
Wait.
Is that the rule?
I'll just have to remember that.
I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'm going to agree anyways.
It just means when you start your own podcast, you just start at episode 100 and go.
Hey.
That's the secret.
Sweet. Now that we know that, that's the way it should
if
go.
If only we had known that 6 years ago. Oh, well.
I'm also the colorist for Zero's Heroes, the superhero webcomic. You can find it at newhavencomics.com. I believe there have been other plugs for that on this episode. But anyway, my story is from my very first game, Sarah's first RPG, which was freshman year of college. My friends, who were mostly women, by the way, that magical like unicorn of gaming, gamer women, that was our pretty much our entire group. Yeah, that was pretty much our entire group. Our GM was a guy, but yeah, we were all women. So we were playing Werewolf the Wild West. And I'm not sure how many people are familiar with this, but compared to White Wolf now, it was a lot easier to botch in Werewolf the Wild West.
Oh, yeah.
So
it was a lot easier just in that...
That
era
system.
Yes.
It, but yeah.
So my story will involve a lot of botches. It was like our second or third session, and we were somewhere in Colorado trying to find this cairn that had been attacked and tainted or whatever. There was possibly a vampire behind this, so we were all kind of on edge. And so we finally come to a canyon that is on the way to this mine where we think the cairn is. And we're going through this canyon thinking, well, this is a prime place for an ambush. And what do you know? Some black spiral dancers showed up. And these were, like, the evil werewolves.
Yeah.
You know, like, the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And it was my first encounter with the bad guys. And I was playing a character who was also very much a noob to the werewolf universe. She was, like, 15 or 16, not confident at all. So the black spiral dancers show up, and I'm kind of inwardly freaking out. Like, there's four of these guys. We just fought one of them earlier, and that was a whole mess. How are we going to fight four at once? So they show up on top of the canyon, kind of growl at us, and then they jump down to try and fight us. Except that the DM rolled so badly on their agility checks to get down the mountain that three of the four of them had passed out from damage by the time they hit the bottom. So we all pounced on the one that was left. And by the time we were done ripping him apart, the others woke up and went, well, Smurf.
That was a little anticlimactic.
And we easily took care of them, and we continued onward.
Okay, can I just...
Plan B.
Can I interrupt for one
then
second?
I will assign myself and come up with a new plan.
Can I just point out that this shows that Sarah fits in at the Gamer's Haven perfectly, because the big fight turned into... Because the big fight, like most of the Gamers Haven podcasts, turned into nothing. Whereas probably one of her popcorn fights is what kicked their butts.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead.
That's not even counting the game that I started running, which the exact same thing happened. Anyway, so we continue on to the mine, and we get there. There's like a little telegraph office with a line to the city nearby, and some people also show up there. There's a black spiral dancer, and there's a couple of the term humans there, which I can't remember the name for in this system.
Fomori.
Yeah,
Fomori.
Fomori.
Something like that.
Anyway, they were basically the zombie minions of the werewolf universe. So one of them went into the telegraph office to signal for help, while the black spiral dancer dealt with us. And so we got ready to fight, and this big speech happens. One of the Ragabai goes to listen to the telegraph wire to see what exactly they're telegraphing back. And they, hearing the message, yell out to us the only thing that they really can in 6 seconds, which is, "Reinforcements! Silver!" And that's when the Black Spiral Dancer goes, "If you live that long," and puts off his attack. The attack that he tries to do is called the Bite of the Bat or something.
Yes.
Bat Bite. Which basically extends your jaw out to like a foot with these dripping with poison with all of these nasty teeth. It looks horrible in the book description. But of course, that was not the DM's night. So, what ended up happening was, "Reinforcements! Silver! If you live that long..." Which is...
And Shelly Forth!
Which is the sound...
Shelly Forth!
For those of you who cannot see my hand motions, the ka-chunk was the sound of the jaw dislocating as the Black Spiral Dancer completely botched the attack. So we laughed at him, and another round went by of us exchanging blows back and forth, and he tries to do the attack again, and botches again.
This is the good point part about rolling behind a GM screen is you can GM fiat it. Because I'm sorry,
You let him die.
No, he just said I'm changing dice now, and that's what happened. So that is one of our best stories, and my very first game, which I love. Werewolf of the Wild West.
Excellent.
Do you like that sound? Then check out the Gamers Haven Podcast at www.gamershavenpodcast.com. It's three guys talking about RPGs, board games, and all things game-related. There is also a huge selection of actual play recordings featuring a variety of your favorite gaming systems. Don't worry, you're safe here. You've found a Gamers Haven.
Even just, like, there's a lot of good stories that just have come out of, like, the Gamers Haven, even the recorded stuff, just oodles and oodles of just... Yeah, if
you losing your hand trying to ride a El Diablo.
Meh.
Deadlands.
I didn't need that hand.
You're familiar with the
I got
the Gorgons, the bulls, the demon, mm-hmm. the devil bulls. He tried to ride one.
and the
he tied his hand to it.
The thing is the despite yeah, you know my long years of gaming, I have never actually played Deadlands.
We'll have to fix that.
We'll have to fix that at some point. Yeah.
You are aware that when I ran Deadlands in New Jersey, that your hand showed up and haunted my characters.
That seems right.
Well, they had your gun.
That's bad.
they had mm-hmm. what was it, like Bad Luck Betty, and so your hand was coming back for its gun.
That's fair.
Well, when I created that game, I created it that their characters were hunting yours.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of them wanted the piece of the true cross that Robin's character
that
had.
That would have ended badly.
I know. It's great.
Because nope. John would have murdered them all.
Yep.
Like, oh, you're hunting us. Well, now there's one less. Oh, well, there's another one. Yep. Oh, well, now there's none of you.
Well, we'll have to rectify the whole "you and no Deadlands" thing at some point.
Yeah, it's
as soon as I'm keep not it. Running as many games as I am.
There's that.
There's that.
It's a fun system. It's...
from the wet dungeon walls.
Hey, the crowd chased another one in.
Welcome, come in, make yourself comfortable.
What is this place?
Don't worry, you found a Gamer's Haven.
The Gamer's Haven Podcast at gamershavenpodcast.com.
So, it's Noah. I don't know if I've told the story on the show before, but this is about the first con game I was ever in. It was a D&D second edition game, and it was a Ravenloft game, and I was playing an archer, and my buddy was playing the priest, and we were in this guy's game, and this is one of my best examples of bad GMing, especially with a pre-written adventure. So in this adventure, the big vampire bad guy shows up, like, right at the beginning, in front of the townspeople, makes this big, stupid speech. And as he's making this speech, I look at my buddy's character sheet. I'm like, do you have any holy water? Yeah. Okay. Okay. So I put my hand up to get the GM's attention. Yeah. So I'm going to rip a piece of my tunic off, tie it around my arrow. Okay. Wait another few seconds. I dip my arrow in his holy water. Okay. There were arrows, right? Yeah. Wait another few seconds. Called shot, vampire's heart. What? Called shot, vampire's heart. He's standing right there. Now, there were plenty of opportunities for this GM to go, there's too many people in the crowd, you're not up high enough, whatever. So he says, you're never
I can just see you testing the air. Measuring out with, you know, figuring out. Saying, could you move a little?
His character actually walked over there and measured it.
You know, you actually spent a good, like, 15
you got
minutes
to the vampire.
Ready to take the shot. You're just like, uh-huh.
You move the vampire
right
over.
Like, taste the holy water. That's not holy enough.
You put up one of those backdrops.
Stabilize yourself.
So at any rate, this is in second edition when they also had like the the chart you had to roll like a D12 on to actually determine if your critical hit roll, your called shot roll, whatever crazy rule they were using.
Optional ones.
Yeah, yeah. So he's like, all right, fine, make the shot. You're never going to make this. It's fine.
Famous last words.
Okay.
No, this is a gamer story business here, but your advice to a GM, never say those words. Never say, you'll never make this shot.
So I nat 20 the shot. I roll to confirm. I confirm, and then I have to roll this D12. It's very possible I nat 20 twice in a row on this to confirm.
You wouldn't the have fate's to confirm. Going,
oh,
so.
Well, yeah.
I don't remember whatever it was. So I rolled both the rolls perfectly because I needed like an 8 on the D12 to hit the heart. Like, and I got it. And the GM's just sitting there looking like a fish out of water, just like opening and closing his mouth because he had no idea what to do.
Trying to figure out like, a way out of this hole he dug himself.
And being a GM now, I'm thinking you could make it be a projection. Uh-huh. You could make it,
protection from arrows. It's like a third level spell.
Whatever it could have been, but twink. This wooden arrow covered in holy water goes right through the vampire's heart. Vampire dies. So we then, and keep in mind, this is like maybe 20 minutes into a 4-hour session. So we end up going through the rest of this module anyway. We get to the last room, and he's like, "Well, this is where you would have fought the vampire."
Time to loot.
But somebody had to ruin it for us. I'm like, dude.
For the rest of us.
But yeah, that's...
And that's when you go, dude, you don't guilt trip well. I'm not guilty because that was awesome.
So yeah, I've left that as one of my favorite...
It always stories. Happens in Ravenloft, too.
Oh yeah.
It always happens in Ravenloft. Yeah. Because we were in Ravenloft. This was with Good Mike. And... I hopefully didn't tell this on last time. But we were in Ravenloft. It doesn't matter. Ravenloft. And so it was... We didn't have any magic. And the folk are, like, sitting around their cemetery, and they're like, well, they keep coming back from the dead, and we can't bury anybody in the cemetery. And we're like, well, that sucks. But we're heroes. We're, like, level 2. We can deal with this. It'll be great. So we walk in there, and there's a zombie lord. Zombie lords in second edition are nasty. And we're like, we're going to die. So being the fighter in the party, I'm like, whatever. Attack. Same type of thing. Called shot. Head. Our GM didn't do the random chart.
Oh, yeah.
He just did the minuses.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was optional stuff. Right. You could do whatever.
I second edition way better than I do.
But no, there was tons of optional stuff. Oh, yeah. So, whatever. Yeah. Doesn't matter. So, roll it. Same type of thing. Always Ravenloft. Crit. Killed him. And the other player there is like, what? Zombie Lord dies. All the other zombies are just
like full
plump. And the people are like, and I'm like, that's right, first round of combat. they're carrying me out. I'm like, Ravenloft is awesome. I love Ravenloft.
That's weird because in the one evil campaign that I played in, I played this barbarian prince that was like, it was the whole Thor thing. He was sent away from his tribe because he was too, and he just ended up with the wrong bunch of people who really fed him being an egotistical prick. Well, they ended up in Ravenloft, and this was James's game.
Mm-hmm.
And my character, two things happened to him in Ravenloft. Actually, three things, excuse me. He ended up with a bag of beans.
Love bags of beans.
Which is the once a day you plant it and something random happens.
Well, oh, yeah.
The first day, so me being the crazy, chaotic, evil dude I was like, I'm just going to plant a bean a day. So the first thing in the morning, I plant a bean. Beanstalk grows. And I'm like, sweet, I chop it down. and meanwhile, the giant is coming down the beanstalk, and I'm like, chop, chop, chop. It falls on a town, decimates it. And we're like, well, that's breakfast. What's next? The next day, I plant the bean. Bean summons the Archangel Michael to raise it.
And he's trapped.
And the Archangel Michael stands there for a second and looks off in the distance, goes, huh. I have to go. And wanders away. Like, good day, sir. The best thing, though, that happened that along this line is in Ravenloft. Who's the lich guy? Is it Azalin?
Azalin.
We ended up in his castle, okay? And I ended up somehow with this ring of spell turning, or this something of spell turning. And, you know, James is building up all this stuff, and Azalin comes out, and it's like, I'm Azalin, I'm the big Lich King, dude, I'm a real big badass. He comes out, and he's like, I'm a crazy lich, I'm being all evil. And I make a snide comment. I think I ask him, it's like, are you using those boots or something? Like, can I just take them? So he's like, all right, well, I cast Disintegrate on you. My ring of spell turning affects the whole thing. It turns back and instantly disintegrates him. Critically failed on his save.
Which destroys his body.
Which destroyed his body, so he goes back to his phylactery and he's got 24 hours to regenerate. And so it's like, before combat starts, wise ass comment, offhanded shot, Azalin is disintegrated, and I'm like, okay, well, is there anything in the dust? It's like, oh yeah, there's a magic ring. Yoink! I was like, all right, I got 24 hours to get out of this domain. Because then he wakes up, 24 hours, he's going to be pissed. I made it out. That eventually, Ravenloft got rid of us. They're like, you guys can't be here anymore. You're too chaotic.
And I love Ravenloft, but yeah.
I got to, just to keep going with stories that we have, this actually happened last session of Wizards College. We decided to go free some prisoners, and we decided to go free some prisoners. So we come up with this great plan. We're gonna set off an explosion, make it look like a djinn did it. We're gonna make a bunch of people teleport away. My character's sitting there ready to set off his explosives. Shit goes wrong before they even get out with the guards. Ethan teleports away with the prisoners.
I'm out.
The guards take one look at go, oh shit, we have no prisoners. Grab random people.
Yes.
I'm outside. I have no idea what the people are supposed to look like to begin with. I think that everything's going fine. They get up there. I set off the dragons who had been pursuing us show up. Yep. I set off my bombs, end up killing like a bunch of people, and that's when the fateful line comes. So, are you going to summon the djinn now, Noah? What are you talking about? You're supposed to summon the djinn. I'm not summoning the djinn. I'm watching from up here. What are you talking about? How would I summon a djinn? I don't have no illumination magic. Well, fuck. And it just went downhill from there.
Meanwhile, I was safe and sound. Oh yeah,
you were safe and sound several thousand miles away. I'm laying there with two red dragons in human disguise on top of me, pretty much.
I didn't have to do anything, and the people are getting themselves captured.
Isn't that the best thing? Right? It's like, you know,
next time we're kicking the GM out of the room before we plan to see how he. That's completely, completely pointless, because I know Andre would never take our planning in front of him and actually use it against us, because that's just not the kind of GM.
I disagree.
I have a set script on what's going to happen.
Oh, I know.
I write that up beforehand.
Oh, I know. We've had some good stuff happen. CantCon, we've had some, I think one of my favorite things from CantCon last year was just running the paranoia was great. And then the guy, it was in your game, I think, the guy who, he had to leave, so he stepped through a door, and it turned out he started falling. And then the next thing you know, everybody else is watching the door, and he falls past again. And it turns out they're in a cylindrical chamber where the gravity on the outside of the chamber is just going around. So this guy is just like continually falling. He never actually dies, but he's just there falling eternally, just circling around the chamber, screaming. It's freaking great. I realized this the other day. My first ever complete character death, which wasn't even complete character death, occurred at CantCon when in Tracy's Care Bears Reloaded game, when at the end of the game, when I tried to stop the train by shooting it, and it blew up in my face, and being Savage Worlds, Tracy had like 5d6 of damage, which he maxed all 5 on the first roll.
I recently had a really good character death. In fact, it was one death and one who stopped at one hit point. They were trying to infiltrate a cult of fanatics. They were Palerite fanatics.
Palerite fanatics? Oh, God.
They were not accepted, quote, by the main denomination, as they are too radical.
That's hilarious.
They would burn anybody who came in as a test of faith. Obviously, if you were faithful, you wouldn't get hurt. And so the first person walks in. It's Ryan. Okay, so you have to go in alone. All right, that's fine. Okay? Is everyone else okay with this? Oh, yeah, that's fine. They take off your gear, all of your gear. Okay, that's fine. They take you to a burning brass table. They're going to strap you on it. Okay? They strap you onto the burning, scalding table. Your flesh begins searing. Do you say anything? Do you say stop? No. Let's keep going. They begin covering you in oil.
Gingerly doing it, just going. Usually they struggle. Yeah.
Usually they tell us to stop.
But the cultists are like, dude, we're like weirded out by you.
They cover him in oil. Okay. Do you say anything? No. I let them light me on fire. They light you on fire. You are burning to death. Do you scream? No, this is a test of my faith. You are burning to death. You will die in the next couple of rounds. That's fine. You have 6 hit points.
Your god is watching going, damn.
You have 6 hit points. Do you scream for help? No. All right, well, you burn. The best part, the second, they come out, hand them his gear and say he wasn't worthy. The cleric says, well, obviously I'm worthy, and he won't.
This is
Brothers. He burned.
You lost your character in Brothers?
No. Oh.
He survived.
No, the next guy, the cleric, Jeremiah, died.
So the cleric, once again, take off his gear, begin burning him alive. Do you say anything? Nope. This is a test of our faith. I was like, well, you burned to ashes. They handed Groot back and earned with your bones. You killed them? Apparently they went willingly.
The best thing that came out of that, though, was when we resurrected him, we tossed in our dead fire elemental and they got merged.
Oh.
So that was my best character death. I paused several times. Do you want to do anything? No. You're burning to death. Do you want to scream in
resistance
pain?
Resistance to fire. barbecue sauce.
Jeremy, they had potions of resist fire.
Oh my god, really? Oh,
and
great.
They didn't drink them.
That's great.
I expected them to be dispelling.
There's the first time I ever killed a player. I was running.
Player or character?
Well.
Where did you bury him?
Clearly.
So this is real reason why you left New Jersey.
Yeah. No. Clearly, I meant to say character. Clearly. At any rate, I was running Keep on the Shadowfell. Mm-hmm. And for those, it's honestly a great module. Whether you like her 4th edition or not, it's a great module.
Some didn't think so, Nathan.
That module was terrible.
It's a fun module.
At any rate,
horrible.
At any rate,
suck.
That was Ethan. That's not in the original
book, man.
What? I lived happily ever after with Clark.
Yeah. At any rate, if you ever play the original module or read through it, there's and I'm sorry, spoilers, whatever. It's too late at this point.
Yeah, whatever.
Go listen to our actual play of it.
Either one.
That's right. There's a part in it where you're trying to hunt down some goblins, and there's 2 fights in a row, mm-hmm. and the second fight is pretty much a boss fight, and it's this goblin like chieftain named I think it's Ironclaw or something.
Doesn't matter, Bob.
So
the Iron Bob.
And according to 4th edition rules, when he gets bloodied, it triggers an attack,
yeah. mm-hmm.
which does something like 3 weapon damage. Well, I wasn't paying attention to my player's health. I try not to kill my players. I try and give them at least a chance, especially characters. Considering this was like the second session.
No, it's funnier when he says players. Just let him say it. Keep going.
So the character plays Iron Claw, and it triggers the attack. So I'm not paying attention. I roll nat 20. Fourth edition, nat 20's max damage. So it was something like 30 points of damage. Tell him how much damage it is. Next thing I hear, I'm dead. I'm sorry, wait. What? I'm dead. What do you mean you're dead? You're at negative con? Or negative bloodied? Yep. Are you sure?
Yep.
I just sat there for a minute because I had never killed a player character before. I had never done it. It just hadn't happened. And I'm just sitting there like kind of flabbergasted. I'm like, okay, what? It's like only 20 minutes into the session, 30 minutes. I have no idea what to do.
Kill another one. I mean, move on. Kill another one.
Once you pop, you just can't stop.
I know.
But it was just that moment of like, oh wow, I really finally have killed somebody's character.
You take it and shred it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I mean, and clearly,
that's what I did in the paranoia.
Yeah, when I ran paranoia. I think Ryan's character was the first one to die in my first game. I just had him hand me my character sheet. And I said, oh, let me see your character sheet for a second. Yeah? Rip. Whee!
As people would die, I would take their character sheets and run it through a paper shredder on the table.
It's only good in the games that don't have resurrection, because game that has resurrection, you're like, shh.
No, we had multiple copies of all the
characters.
Yeah. We kept multiple copies of the character sheets. I just handed him a new one.
Now you make it work for it. You
tie
a thing of tape.
What's really funny is actually
once you're done, the resurrection's done.
You're joking. Paranoia's rulebook says to do that.
This is perfect for rituals now.
Oh, I got a little bit of somebody else's soul here. Oh, really?
So apparently I have a +2 sword I didn't have before.
It's just jammed inside.
Oh, it was stuck in my spleen.
I didn't need that, right?
But I don't know. Like, this is our 100th episode, and it just, you know, the last thing I have to say is to second a lot of what Tracy said. I mean, Tracy talked about how Gamers Haven changed the way he looked at games and introduced him to new games. And if it wasn't for Gamers Haven, I never would have looked at... I would have never known about Mutants and Masterminds. I never would have known about Savage Worlds and Deadlands.
Say Fate.
And, well, no, that it's completely true. I never would have given a second look at Fate. I mean, to me...
Well, like, no one should give a second look at Fate.
Yeah. I mean, I the only games... I worked in a game store, and I looked at, like, Rifts, and I never really looked at it. I'm like, oh, wow, there's
you
a lot of...
You should give a second look at it just to see what evil looks like.
go donate to pet stores.
When you stare into the abyss, stares like into you.
Right. But I mean, my systems
then
were...
Then you can say, I've looked into the face of the devil.
My systems were...
And it was dumb.
And it was Rifts.
My systems were 3rd edition, 4th edition, 2nd edition a long time ago, and I looked at, I had looked at where Vampire and the original Vampire, and I had looked at
No, I'm a loner in this group.
But if it hadn't been for Gamers Haven, I never would have given a second thought. And this goes out to if it hadn't been for CantCon, I wouldn't be where I am right now today, sitting at this table with people who I consider some of my closest friends in the world, with a lovely girlfriend in a place that I love to be, back doing what I love to do, which is cooking. This podcast has done a heck of a lot for me, and it's great. I want to see another 100, I want to see 1,000 episodes, 20 years from now. I want us to still be doing this, because it's a great site. Welcome to Nirvana, welcome to a higher level. Let's keep going. That's all I can really say.
And it only took a couple of years of heavy breathing, late night phone calls,
boiling our rabbits.
Oh, God.
Well, it's a horrifying dude. We don't even own rabbits. Where are you getting these things?
I mean, you joke, but like...
I'm boiling a rabbit right now.
you joke, but I remember sending I probably still have it in here. The first email I ever sent to you saying, hey, I love the podcast. I'm a big fan. Would you want someone to do, like, now and then a segment on food and gaming? And their response was like, yeah, sure, why not? And I thought that was the coolest thing ever, because it was like I had no idea who these people were. I found the Gamers Haven through Keep on the Shadowfell, because my first experience with actual play podcasts, which is the same for I think a couple people, was when Wizards of the Coast put out, mm-hmm. I think it's Chris Pramis ran it, ran games for the guys from Penny Arcade. Penny Arcade. Mm-hmm. He ran games for Penny Arcade, and he ran them through parts of Keep on the Shadowfell. And when I found out it was Keep on the Shadowfell, I searched iTunes for Keep on the Shadowfell. And what I came across was The Gamer's Haven.
Yeah, we were the first non-WotC podcast to do D&D 4th Edition actual play.
Right. And yeah, so I listened to that. I listened to some of the core podcasts, and then I started listening to, I think my next one was either Wizards College or no, my next one was the game that I think you ran, where you were playing the Druid, the third edition mm-hmm. game.
I was Saxon.
Yeah, where you were Saxon.
Because I do such a great job recording them.
Well,
it's like whatever.
Honestly, it was fine. And that was
fun, dude. You press the button and leave it alone.
Push it around. Is it still working?
I went from there to Deadlands to Wizards College, and then and I don't know how many times I've told this story on the show, and I don't really care. In 2011, it was May, and my ex-wife got to go on vacation. I asked her, you know, why can't I go on vacation? I'm the one working 70 hours a week for us. But she said, well, where do you want to go? And it took me all of about 2.5 minutes to go, you know what? I want to go to Kansas.
Go to Kansas.
Well, no,
her head is like,
but that's not true, because she had interacted with you via Skype, and she'd interacted with certain other people who won't be named via Skype, and who were
knew you were going to a real place in Kansas, not the rest of Kansas.
Right, I had talked to her about CantCon.
He's not yet.
I had talked to her about CantCon before, and I decided to.
Was it delayed?
It was.
And I said
Y2K.
Yeah,
Kool-Aid.
And I decided to come to CantCon, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made. And I split off from her about a month later, because I realized there was more out there than just stupidity. Pardon me. I came to CantCon last July. I finished up that stupid divorce. And what happened at the end of the con?
You cried.
I cried. I cried a lot. And well, I cried because you handed me that freaking bucket, which I still have in my room.
Uh-huh.
And
that we all started putting money in. Yes.
That everybody started putting money in, and it pushed me to take the next 3 months and save every penny I could, and with the help of some awesome, awesome friends, I made it out here. 3 months later, I made it out here in October, and I have really not looked back since, and it's been great, and it's Gamers Haven. It's nothing but Gamers Haven is what got me here, and everybody here, and all the awesome people who are here. So, you know what? God bless. Let's keep on rolling.
You've been listening to the Gamers Haven Podcast. Subscribe to the show by visiting our website at gamershavenpodcast.com, where you can also discuss all things gaming in our forum, drop us an email, or just peruse our episode archives. Enjoy what you hear? Why not support the Gamers Haven by purchasing Gamers Haven merchandise, visiting our affiliates, or just by clicking on our donate button? The Gamers Haven Podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial, Share Alike 3.0 United States License, some rights reserved,
This is a Thousand Monkeys production.
This concludes the broadcast from World Control.
This podcast was cut by Uncool Aaron.